This is PFW in Progress.
The best undiscovered female voices will sing on this stage tonight with one definite goal: to win your vote. You decide their destiny. You make the call. The competition is on. Let's go. This is
PFW in Progress with Fred Kirsch.
I like that, Fred. Though.
I think it was a complete and utter mess. It didn't work. It was all over the place. You were forgetting your words. It just didn't work.
Lightly.
I really, really, really hated that. Sorry.
Paul Perillo.
Are you drunk?
No, not at all.
No.
I thought it was ridiculous.
And Andy. And Andy?
Last week you indicated that you are on a different page.
Well, let's just redefine that as correct page.
Andy Hart.
No, being serious, I watched the show back and I have to say, if I was giving myself marks out of 10, I'd give myself a 10.
Some guy named Tom.
The reality is, it is actually more than just singing. It is about personality. It's about the right choices. So you can't come up on a stage like tonight and be in your own world and hope that you're going to interest the American audience, because they're going to forget that performance three performances later. So not your best night by a mile.
And you never know. Rory might stop by.
You are cute. You're likable.
Hey.
I think America, if they haven't already, are going to fall in love with you.
PFW in Progress.
There's nothing much you can do. And there were parts during the performance where it was actually painful. It didn't work. You can't keep doing this week after week after week. Sorry.
All right. We're not sorry. We're PFW in Progress, and we're here. It's noon Eastern time at Gillette Stadium. It's Fred Kirsch, Andy Hart, Tom Casale, Gary Gradecki in the booth. Paul is not here. He's big-timing us. He's at a Northeastern Huskies fundraising golf tournament.
It's for Northeastern?
It's for Northeastern, yeah. He and his brother, so we got to make fun
what
of Paul.
A pear-shaped loser.
Yeah. You know, so hopefully...
He just loves raising money for random schools, I guess.
No, he just
that
loves...
That he didn't attend. And...
Well, he didn't go there, but he loves Northeastern, so, you know, you figure it out.
More importantly,
yeah,
we have big news on today's show.
Yes.
Josh Tolles is our favorite listener of the day.
Oh!
For sending us a tremendous spread.
Wow.
Buffalo wings, pizza. Even Tom's happy because he got his nice turkey sub.
Tom can't even talk. His mouth is so full
of
turkey sub.
Right on the money. Right on the money.
He's all set.
And so, how do you think it gets on the money?
Josh in Arlington, you're the greatest listener ever.
Josh in Arlington. Thank you
very much. At least for the next 7 days.
Awesome. So if I see
by
your,
next Wednesday, you can be replaced.
If I see a Josh email come into the box,
read it.
First attention.
If it's messed up, fix it so he sounds like a genius. Don't just do your normal way. I can't read this.
All right.
But we
be
should
nice.
Talk about the big news around here. Gary Gradecki has gotten engaged.
Yes.
Congratulations, Gary.
Woo! Now this was 6 months ago, though,
yeah.
Right?
A couple months
Well, he
ago,
didn't
yeah.
want to talk about it till after she turned 18 for, you know,
oh,
obvious
oh, I
reasons.
See. Yeah, sure.
Her
you
dad
don't,
might
you don't
get mad
to,
and
yeah, get in
send
trouble,
him to jail.
Man. Yeah, absolutely.
So now that she's finally of age, it's public. You know?
Yeah.
We all know.
Now was this... mail order? Or how did you meet her?
I thought you were going to ask if it was a mail.
Yeah, online, Fred.
Oh, okay, online. Good.
No,
that's
just
great.
Kidding.
No, we all know where he met her.
I met my girlfriend online.
Did you?
Oh.
Really? The one you're marrying now?
Yeah, that thing is great.
Really?
You want to get laid, you go online.
Okay. All right.
I'm telling you.
But all right.
Gary, I'm not recording that.
Gary, are you sure you want to get married?
Very sure.
Think about it. Because I got my bachelor party this week, and I'm starting to get nervous.
Okay.
Why are you getting nervous?
I'm just getting nervous.
You realize that no other woman in the world looks at you anymore, so you might want to get it done.
I understand, but
okay, just
I will be out and about in Boston this weekend, so anybody who wants to take a shot at me, I'll be around in the Boston Commons area. So first I'll
is
drink.
Is that where your bachelor party is, right out there in the Commons?
Well, they got a keg. They got like a, well, yeah, they got like a luxury apartment. We're going to drink all day. So first I'll drink you under the table, then I'll put you through one. Anybody who's got a problem with
wow.
me.
Wow. And then
he'll bend
then
you
what?
Over one.
And I thought you were two beers and drunk, Tom.
No, I go all night.
You taking a limo down south to the lady?
No, we're gonna go out. I'm gonna my last chance to get myself a 19-year-old Asian girl.
Okay,
you know, one more shot. But
there's a club in that area, isn't that?
Well, there used to be the combat
listen,
zone
to
used
those,
to be there.
Well, there's a new one.
Foxy opened up a club.
No,
there.
Not the Foxy. Centerfolds.
Oh, Centerfolds opened.
And they
up,
have
yeah.
decent talent. It's not very interactive.
Boring.
So it's not all that fun.
Sounds like you've been there.
I have.
I'd rather look for real women.
All right. But the real big news today is that NFL Hall of Famer,
Pro
Patriot
Football Hall of Famer.
Hall of Famer will be here. John Hanna will be joining us. What time is that, Gary? Do you know?
We don't know. 1220? About 1220. So in about
it's a Hall of Famer whenever he wants to.
About 15 minutes, John Hanna will be here, and we'll sit down and catch up with him and see what he's up to these days. And he was over at the mini camp this weekend, so we can give us his impressions of what he saw.
And we can tell him to be totally honest, right?
Well, yeah.
Anything he saw and thought, we want to hear.
I mean, it's up to whatever he wants to say.
So, for example, if a guy blew chunks and didn't make a very good first impression, he can talk about it.
Well, I mean, I would say that, you know, blowing chunks isn't the worst thing. At least you know, as a coach, he's doing everything he can.
To be out of shape when he arrives for rookie.
I'm sorry, Fred.
Well, a lot of these guys are out of shape.
Were you there?
No.
Okay. It was embarrassing. Really? The guy couldn't get through a drill.
Based on that argument, I can't talk
about
it
either. Maybe he was sick. Maybe he had a
stomach. Maybe he was, but I'm just saying, every drill they did, he looked like he shouldn't even be on the field.
He could have been sick.
How about my boy, Justin Warren?
Or he could have been out of shape.
Right.
I was a little surprised.
Which is embarrassing.
But if it was from the start, it probably wasn't out of shape.
But Belichick was not happy at his press conference when, Bert Breer asked him about conditioning for certain tests, and you could tell he was not happy.
Okay.
And I'm just telling you, it was worse than, like, when you read it on the website or in the paper, you might think one thing, but watching it, every drill they did, the other two guys looked like they were head and shoulders above him, and those are fifth and seventh round draft picks. It's not like he's going up against John Hanna.
Right. Okay. All right, what else do we have here? Any news coming out of this week?
Well, Justin Warren got cut.
Justin Warren got cut.
They signed a couple of the tryout guys, including that safety out of Air Force.
Yep.
Nothing really all that notable.
Right. I know a lot of people are interested in Matt Gutierrez.
He's the high, obviously the position and the story. You know, the Globe had the little thing today trying to compare him to Brady and make him the next Brady and all that, but let's be honest.
Right.
He is what he is at this point. A guy who was great in high school and hasn't done anything since.
Okay. Tom's raising his hand.
Well, and we were talking, some of the media people were talking at the minicamp. Brady had a good college career.
That kind of
gets washed, you know, thrown under the bus now, but it wasn't like Brady came out of nowhere. Granted, he was a sixth-round draft pick, and no one thought he was going to be Tom Brady. But to compare like guys like Gutierrez to Brady kind of isn't fair.
Check the record books at Michigan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tom Brady did some things in a college football uniform. Matt Gutierrez couldn't start there, transferred. Now, whether there was a, you know, we all know that Lloyd Carr has some issues with different players, and not a lot of players like him after they leave. But he transferred and then still didn't have that much success at Idaho State. You know, as Tom's talked about, people were questioning his arm strength. Apparently, after seeing him, Tom feels a little bit better, at least about the arm strength thing.
On the short routes, he didn't throw any long balls.
Right.
Long routes there.
I mean, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves on this nice little story.
That was a turkey sub you just heard.
That was a turkey sub, Tom. And
Tom is inhaling that turkey sub.
I'm trying to get it out of the way so I can
talk. Last swallow in the full 12.
you know, he's going
this guy wants
the chair
to be entertained. Josh said, I threw in an extra order of boneless buffalo wings. Entertain me. So say something funny.
Josh, you're a douchebag.
He'll like that.
I don't eat buffalo wings, so I really could care less. Thanks
but
for
you
the
are
sub,
happy with the turkey sub.
That was one heck of a sub.
It's good stuff. And now both Fred and I get our own little order of boneless buffalo
wings. Oh, it's excellent. I don't
this ought to
share.
Be pretty later.
Because Andy double dips into the blue cheese, and I don't like
I'm pretty sure that boneless buffalo wings go in as... Well, orange chicken fingers and come out.
Orange fire water.
Right. All right.
This is one thing that goes in and comes out the same color.
Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Webradio@patriots.com. A lot of NFL news. Ted Johnson was on Real Sports with Brian Gumbel.
That was interesting.
And talking about, you know, the concussions in the NFL and Tom, you watched it, and the NFL really didn't come off looking that good.
Now, if I was the NFL, I would have said no comment, instead of having that doctor that said, well, it doesn't cause anything. Now, granted, I don't know if these head injuries cause Alzheimer's disease. I think there's a lot of studies that need to be done before you can say that. But to say they don't cause anything, that they're not in direct effect to anything that happens after the NFL, that's just stupid. It's just stupid.
This is going to be a good... You know, Goodell's done all these things and got all these ideas. It'll be interesting to see as he takes over this whole situation. I know he's already called that symposium or something where he's invited all the teams together, and he's actually invited researchers who sort of have the other side say, you know, there are issues here. There is research. It'll be interesting to see how Goodell handles this and takes it to the next level because Tom's right. You can't just say, no, nothing happens. You know, there's no evidence of anything. You don't have to tell me, well, it's the most dangerous thing in the world, and you got to stop the sport. But there's a middle ground there where you can admit guys who suffer concussions might have long-lasting effects later in life.
And right. Fred, if you were the head of this, wouldn't you come out and say something along the lines of, well, we're not saying one way or the other, but further research is needed in this area?
Absolutely. And that's the truth. I have no problem with that.
Instead of just saying, no, I'm the only guy in the world who doesn't think this. That was just didn't make much sense to me.
And as we talked about in the office, the one thing that I think hasn't even been brought up here is, where do steroids play a role in here? And could there be a role, a connection between the chemicals, the concussions, the advancement of these Alzheimer's and things that do happen naturally in a lot of elderly people? Is there any way that these are sped up because of, you know, 10, 15, 20 years on performance-enhancing drugs?
And I think you're right about that, because I don't think people put enough emphasis on the steroids. I think they think, well, it gets you bigger, it does something. But steroids can be really bad if you take them for an extended period of time, like 8 to 10 years.
And my whole theory has always been they speed up the processes in your body, the recuperatory processes
Everything.
Of the muscles. Well, I'm assuming if they speed that up, there's a chance they speed up other things that are bad.
Anything that would be
degenerative,
yes.
So would speed that up as well.
Anything that may have occurred to you when you were 80,
right.
Well, you've had it fast-forwarded 10, 15, 20, 25 years.
Yeah. So it's interesting. You know, it's a tough situation.
Gary agrees with me. He just gave me a nod of approval with that idea.
That was really interesting.
It's a tough situation for the NFL because they really don't want to go back and start talking to retired players because they got a lot of problems with them as it is with the pay. And
that's another issue I'd like to bring up. Did you watch that on SportsCenter recently or Outside the Lines? They had a big thing on that.
No.
I'm a lot less sensitive to the crying of the ex-players than I used to be.
Yeah.
When I saw that the bulk of them that have no money, it's because they chose to take their pension immediately.
Right.
The people who waited like a normal person has to 62 or what, when you're old, some of those guys are getting, old guys from like the 60s are getting like $7,000 a month.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. If you did it the right way,
right.
We can't all just decide we want retirement right now.
Right. There is a lot of belly aching out there.
There's a lot of whining and mistruths and misrepresentation of the fact.
But when it comes to injuries and things like that.
You're spearheading this?
It's a tough situation. It's a tough situation.
I'm just saying, I was always sympathetic. I kind of bought into the idea that the current players have turned their back on the guys who, but when I heard that, if you chose to actually wait until you were of retirement age, you're getting a very nice pension.
Yeah.
And this was, I think, a guy that, you know, was a comparison of same exact terms of career. You know, they were all 6-year veterans or whatever. And the guy who waited till normal time, 62 or whatever, is getting 70 something hundred a month.
Yep.
That's a lot of money.
Yep. All right. Rookie camp is over. Coming up though soon is, I guess they call it a passing camp.
Yes.
And that starts when?
June. Is the first week in June, like the 4th, 5th, 3rd, 4th,
that's the mandatory mini camp.
There's passing camps in May.
Right.
It'll be interesting to see because they're now supposed to be open. They are now supposed to be available to the media.
Oh, so we didn't have it last year.
No.
We weren't able to go.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't remember.
These
being
are those
there.
New guidelines that are supposedly being put in place by Goodell and the NFL.
So I thought Bill answered a question badly. They asked him about, is Moss going to be partaking in the off-season program? And he said, well, we'll worry about that when the off-season gets here. Well, what's this? Is he going to be here or not, Bill?
He's here today.
Yes or no? He's here?
Yes.
Okay. End of story.
My understanding is he's here today.
See, the thing about Bill is he has to be consistent. If he starts telling you whether Moss is going to be here, he has to tell you about everybody else. So he'd say nothing about anyone.
No, I know, but
I'm
not blaming him. I'm blaming maybe the reporter should be a little bit more.
No, but you're right. Bill could handle a little better by saying, look, I'm not going to comment on who's coming, who's going, you know, and leave it at that.
But Moss does not have a number as of yet.
He does not.
The information we got yesterday was inaccurate.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, there was a rumor, and we're not going to say what the rumor is because we were asked not to, that he might have a number by the end of the week.
He has refused that number.
Okay.
He's
69.
Apparently, he's maintaining his list of the numbers he's worn in the past.
Okay.
18, 83.
And
no,
88.
No, no.
84.
84.
88.
And
aren't those taken?
Are all taken
all
right
taken.
Now.
But too bad. Find another number.
So, well, I think the smartest guy
69.
Here would be Kyle Brady. Go to Moss and say, give me $300,000 and you can wear 88 and I'll just move to 82.
Well, the thing about it is everywhere he's gone, he switched numbers. Why not now?
See, I think this is stupid because, like you said, Fred, it's not Jerry Rice who's worn 80 for 17 years, then went to the Raiders and wants 80. Moss has changed numbers throughout his career. Just pick a number.
Yeah.
This is, when players do this to me, If you're known for one number and you're like a Hall of Fame caliber player, I can kind of understand it. Like if Brett Favre went somewhere and wanted the number four.
Right.
But Moss isn't really known for a particular number. Right. Just pick one.
Plus, you know, this is the day and age where guys like Kobe Bryant change their number just to change their number.
Gary, maybe we should get Ken Flanders on the phone to see how much this is costing the pro shop by Randy Moss not picking a number.
Hi, you've reached the desk of Ken Flanders at Gillette Stadium.
He's never there.
He's never at his desk.
Maybe he's out trying to find out what the number's going to be.
Yeah.
Because he does have well over 500 orders.
Is that right?
For jerseys?
Yes. Without even people knowing what number
with no number, just a blank jersey that you'll get the number when he picks one.
Yeah, so he needs to pick a number so that the pro shop can start shipping out those shirts.
There's also some other number issues. Brandon Merriweather is not exactly in love with number 38, so there's some wonder if he might want to change it.
Now, how does that work, Fred? Are they selling 38 Merriweather jerseys right now? Or are they waiting
No, I've
after?
Seen blanks so far.
Still blanks.
So they wait until he gets an official number.
Right, but it will hurt them if it goes beyond the start of training camp, because a lot of fans buy them right in that area. They're here, they come to camp, they buy a jersey.
So you're saying, sell them, you're saying Mel Mitchell ain't going to be around much longer?
I'm saying Merriweather wants a number in the 20s. If I'm a guy who's on the bubble in the 20s, I sell him the number.
Yeah.
But I might get cut and get nothing out.
Absolutely. Get something
That's
out
what happened with Ulla Tuatelli, if you remember. Roosevelt Colvin offered him money. Tuatelli declined. So Colvin said, okay, I'll just wait for you to get cut, because you're going to get cut. And he got cut. Colvin got the jersey, and Tuatelli got nothing.
Yeah, so you might as well, you know, while someone's offering you a number, you might as well take it, right?
If you're a fringe player and somebody's giving you cash,
yes,
take the money and run.
Okay, well, interesting stuff. What else? Anything else going on before we get to emails, which we have a lot of?
Not in terms of the Patriots.
Now, the rookie mini camp was pretty boring because they weren't even passing or anything. They didn't have a lot of players there. So you're basically watching just positional drills. Nothing you can really go by.
Okay. And in walks, as we speak, John Hanna. So John's settling in.
How you doing?
Someone
John,
turn on his headphones for him.
Oh yeah, you got a little switch on the side there. Gary, you're the producer. Get in here.
The side of your headphone.
We've got a Hall of Famer walk in, and Gary's sitting there playing solitaire.
Well, the battery's out. I replaced it with yours.
Oh jeez.
It was on.
All right. So
while now he's not there to play the circus music for the show.
While John gets settled in here, get him a drink of water, Gary, will you?
I got it.
Gary just told me to go do something to myself.
Yeah, it wasn't very nice.
All right, John's here. John, thank you for coming in here.
Well, I appreciate it. I thought we were going to get started at 12:30, guys. You beat me to the punch.
Oh, we're here until 2.
Oh, yeah.
We show up when the food is here.
Oh, I got you. I got you.
And by the way, if you want any, dig in.
I'd appreciate that.
So, John Hanna, I always call you the Patriots' only true Hall of Famer. I know Mike Haynes is a Hall of Fame, but you were a Patriot. Mike made a lot of his bones with the Raiders after he left here. So you are the Hall of Famer for the Patriots. And, you know, first off, I think fans want to catch up on what you've been doing.
Yeah.
And then second of all, you know, your take on this incredible ride that has happened over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years with the Patriots. 6 years, and what it means to you as a former Patriot.
Well, I think what I'm doing now is basically I'm in the business world, and we're doing team building, retained executive searches, organizational development, things of that nature.
Can you find these guys a job?
One that pays more.
We represent the organization, not the employee.
Okay.
So we're already on the wrong end of that stick.
So that's what I'm doing now. And it's very similar to what I was doing on the investment consulting side. The difference is now instead of working for a money manager, I'm just looking for people.
Right.
So it's the same thing I was doing before, only a different avenue.
Yep.
And, you know, as far as the ride is concerned, it's phenomenal. I think Coach Belichick has done a superior job. I think, you know, Mr. Kraft's the owner done it. He's finally figured out that, you know, the way you make a franchise profitable and financially lucrative is the fact that, you know, you go after the wins and you find a way to make money by winning and not just making money by itself. And I think, you know, the combination of the owners, you know, whether it be Bob or Jonathan or whomever's in charge, and then the Belichick, you know, with that great system that he's got, you just can't beat it.
You know, from what you've seen of Belichick, Would that be a coach that you would want to play for? That, you know, that.
Well, I don't know. I haven't been under him a lot, you know, so I don't know that much about him. I know, you know, the thing I do, and I'm glad you're mentioning this, because I wanted to spell something right now. You know, there's a lot of comment today, you know, this weekend about with the Herald about, you know, some speculation of wanting my advice. And the last thing Coach Belichick needs is my advice.
Right, right. Where'd that come
from? You know, I have no idea. I mean, I'm just sitting there watching practice trying to be a nice guy, and all of a sudden they try to turn the table on you.
Right.
If anything, you know, I can learn from Coach Belichick, especially in the qualities of how you put together a team and some of the issues that he's done. And, you know, I feel like, you know, that's the strength that he's got, is he's been able to put together people who are willing to sacrifice me for we. Yeah. And, you know, I have all the respect and admiration for him. And not only that, but the game has changed so much since I've played. You know, I feel, you know, I was thinking about it on the ride home after attending minicamp, and I remember in the late 70s, early 80s, my dad, you know, played with the Giants in 51, so I went and bought an NFL film highlights of the 1951 Giants so we could kind of see my dad play. And, oh, Lord, when I looked at the way he played, I said, you got to be kidding me, man. This is junk football, you know, because they're, you know, they're hitting with the shoulder and using their head, doing reverse body blocks and all that, which, by the way, I will say this. I took some of the things that I saw and kind of put it into my game, you know, because it helped a little bit. But you know, it was so different. So in a way, when I think about it, that was about 20-something years after he had played, and now it's 20-something years after I played, and the same evolutions occurred in the game. So I can't help them in offensive technique. It's just a different game now.
Yeah.
And I want to just dispel that in any way, and if anything, guys, I just need to pick his brain.
Yeah. Well, speaking of minicamp, you were there checking it out, and is there anything that, you know, you – a person can tell from what these guys are doing about, oh, this guy looks good, or this guy. I mean, really, can you tell anything from minicamp?
Yeah, a little bit. You can find out whether they have the tools. I mean, the issue is the tools. You know, do they have the speed? Do they have the quickness? Do they have good feet? You can look at strength. You can basically you can analyze the tools. The other thing I saw is one of the players, and I won't mention names. You know, he was going through the camp and he's barfing and throwing up. And I said, maybe that's the same, you know, it's a little bit. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a lack of dedication because, you know, the thing is as a rookie, for instance, you know, when I came in the league, we had played with I came out of a wishbone offense. You know, I knew nothing about the techniques of offensive line play. And so I had to relearn everything. But what I could control was my conditioning. Yeah. And that's the one thing that I saw. And that's, I feel like, you know, maybe this kid, maybe he wasn't dedicated like he should have been. And I think that's a telltale sign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, he's not ready to perform and do the best he can. And so things like that. And it's, I think it's a lot of learning and just kind of, measuring their tools.
Yep.
And, but you really can't tell anything else about that.
You mentioned that, you know, it's obviously the evolution of the game. It's a totally different game and you can learn more than you can teach maybe at this point with some of these guys. But do you still, they say it's so hard for a guy to walk away from the game. Is there any of that fire when you're sitting out in the tent saying, I remember when I was the guy in my first camp and just that envy of these guys that are on the beginning of this season, the career, whatever?
Yeah, I think, you know, the one thing that I think there's an old quote that Dick Butkus had one time, and they said, what was the worst thing about giving up football? And he says, finding out what I wanted to be second best at in my life.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's the issue. I even talked to my dad one time, you know, after I'd gotten out of ball and I'm sitting there and we're watching a game and I talked to my dad and I said, do you ever look at the game and say, man, I could kick that guy's butt, you know? And he says, I might not beat him the whole game, but I could beat him a player or two. And he's almost 70 years old
right.
at the time.
Yeah. Right.
So there's that ego.
Yep.
There's an ego there that still makes you think that, yeah, I could play. And, you miss that part of it. And even now, every time you hear the Star Spangled Banner, you want to hit somebody.
Yep.
It's a funny thing, but you just it's like Pavlov's,
yep.
Pavlov's dog. You know, you've been trained to react to certain things. And yeah, you get accustomed to it and man, you get fiery.
That reminds me of that story, about Ted Williams. You know, this is like, you know, he became like the Red Sox hitting coach and getting on in years. And two of the Red Sox guys were watching batting practice and some of the pitchers. And one of them says, you know, how do you think Ted Williams would do against today's pitchers? And the other guy goes, he'd probably bat about 350. He goes, really? 350? Yeah. He goes, well, he's 60 years old.
Yeah. Well, you know, you look at that, and that's the thing. I mean, it's you know, when I played, you know, it was a much more of a running game. The run blocks on offense, basically, you know, your backs were hitting the hole at 1.2 to 1.3. And all now, you know, it's taken it's much more of a reading type offense. So the skill sets that you need in today's game are so much different than when I played. To be honest with you, thinking back on it and kind of, you know, trying to analyze a little bit, probably if I were to play today, I'd have to go to a two-back system and be like a lead blocking fullback.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that would be the position that I would probably be best suited for in today's game.
That's interesting.
And I probably weighed about the same as most of them. You know, about 265 is what most of these fullbacks are playing.
Yeah, because you played about 265, 270. Yeah.
Are there any guys today that you watch on the offensive line that you enjoy watching?
Yeah, I watch a lot of guys, and I think there's a lot of guys out there. You know, the worst thing I have is I don't have a really good memory for names. I mean, I watch teams, I watch concepts, and, you know, I really enjoy, you know, some of the offensive lines that I can relate to a lot are like for the Broncos, because they're a smaller, quicker, more aggressive offensive line. They're more accustomed to the type play that we did, and I can understand their game a little bit more than a lot of the zones and stretches where, you know, you're such a that goes back to like the old Cincinnati Bengals 78. I never could understand what they were doing then either, so it was a whole different
Fred
thing.
Just a quick email. Rob Kreppel would like us to say that this is awesome having John on, but Fred, be quiet and let the other guys ask questions.
This is what I have to put up with. You had a good question.
Well,
he brings up
the style and the Broncos, the smaller line, the zone blocking. There's been some talk that with Maroney taking over this year, becoming the lead dog, that they might have to change the offensive line blocking schemes a little bit, get away from Corey Dillon, who was a little bigger, a little more of a power runner. Maroney's more dynamic, big play, one cut maybe kind of guy. Do you think they'll have to do some of that, that Dante will have to put in some new schemes and maybe alter the system a little bit for Maroney?
He may have to. I don't know. That'll be a decision that they'll have to make. Sometimes it's easier to change one running back than it is a five offensive lineman, too.
Yep.
You know, so you've got to think, well, which way the coach is going to go. But, you know, if you looked at the offensive line play last year, Dante was using some more dive-oriented type plays, a lot more than he had done in previous years, and where the backs were, you know, basically having a two-hole read.
Yep.
And, you know, that allows a back to hit that line of scrimmage so much faster. So, you know, you see it already kind of happening last year a little bit. So maybe there will. That's just up to them. Dante, you know, what's funny is I remember – and I'm going to kind of intertwine two stories here and two things I wanted to say. One, you know, when Dante came here, I was kind of on the tail end of my career. And, you know, I was really upset because they were bringing all these rookie coaches from SMU that didn't know anything about the pro game. And so I was really resentful that those guys came in because, you know, I was wanting to try to win a Super Bowl before I left here. You know, but I've seen Dante mature and grow and become a great offensive line coach. And parlay that, what I wanted to carry it on to, is I've also, a lot of people asking me now, and if you don't mind me kind of taking the throne here,
no problem,
about Randy Moss and how is he going to fit in. And, you know, when I look at Randy and hear some of the comments that he makes and things like that, a lot of people paying him as selfish and things of this nature. And I'm wondering if his attitude wasn't very similar to mine at that point in time. He resents the fact that he was organizations that truly weren't dedicated to winning a Super Bowl. Now that he's here and he's with an organization that's truly committed to winning a Super Bowl, I think you'll see his attitude change.
I agree. I really do.
But, John, let me ask you, aren't there a lot of players who want to win a Super Bowl? You know what I mean? Like throughout the league, that may not be on teams, but they still give effort. You know?
There's no question about it. There is, but you know, you after a while, especially when you start hitting midlife in the NFL or a little bit later, all of a sudden, you know, that time clock clicks off, and you say, "Gosh, there's not much left." And, you know, I got to get somewhere. I want the ring. I want the ring. Because no matter how much, you know, money for most of the great athletes, money is a measure of success and personal success. That's, and once you've got that, personal success is kind of, that's gone. But the number one overriding motivation of any great athlete or any great pro is winning that ring. And, you know, when you're with an organization and you see them doing things, I mean, look at Brett Favre this week.
Yeah.
I mean, he's blasting. Right. He's always been a great team player. But, you know, here is a team that's not dedicated to bringing in the receivers right. like Coach Belichick is doing to build the organization. You know, Green Bay should do the same thing. Give him some people to throw the ball to. And so now, what'd you see? You saw frustration. You saw anger because now he knows he's on the last years. He wants that chance to go to the Super Bowl to win that one ring. So you see these kind of things happen, and it's a, you know, you're talking about thoroughbreds here, not jackasses.
Right.
So these guys are outspoken, they're strong personalities, and as you're going to hear, you're going to get that.
Is that the toughest time? I mean, you said you went through that late in your career here, and, you know, Favre is at the end of the road, Moss might be sort of turning that corner. Is that the toughest time when you're a great athlete?
Absolutely, it's the toughest time. Absolutely the toughest time, because there's so much pressure you put on yourself to get that ring before I get out of the league.
Right.
The one advantage you've got today that I didn't have when I played is free agency.
Right.
So they have the ability to transfer and go to a team, hopefully, that is trying to win a Super Bowl. Whereas before, you know, the choice you had was basically go to another team. And, you know, I appreciate, Fred, what you said about being the only Patriots. But there was a time I was trying to get out of here, 83. I was really trying to get out of here. And I knew that the Raiders wanted me. I knew Al Davis wanted to win a Super Bowl. I wanted to go there so bad I could taste it. But, you know, they were wanting two number ones for me, and I was 31 years old. Well, nobody's worth – at 31 years old, nobody's worth two number
right.
ones. Yeah. So I was never going to get
out
of here.
I mean, what you say, Tom, I understand what you're saying. I think when – you know, because when John was playing, there was a time, I think, Sports Illustrated named you the greatest offensive lineman ever while you were playing.
Yeah.
Randy Moss, people are saying he's one of the greatest that ever played. And he hears that, but the one thing he knows is – I don't have the ring.
Right.
Right.
So it's like John's, it starts to really, you know, it's like that clock, that internal clock that goes off. And, you know, he's not afraid to speak his mind. John, you weren't afraid to speak
right.
your mind.
Well, most great athletes aren't because, I mean, if you think about it, that's what, you know, they're strong-willed people. That's what, that's part of their success ratio. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're not a little stubborn, a little, you know, outspoken, a little, you know, a little tougher, you know, you're not going to be a great athlete because you're not willing to take the chance. I think everybody that's a great athlete, you know, there's a little bit of that strong self-confidence that allows them to do things that a lot of athletes won't.
Yeah, because at one time you said you were just going to go back to the farm, right?
Well, that was 83.
Yes,
I mean, the whole idea was if they're not going to change coaching staffs to try to win a Super Bowl, you know, and they're going to bring in these rookie guys that, you know, aren't going to help.
Right.
You know, why should I go ahead and start, you know, because I was already beginning to suffer with my knees and my shoulders and things like that. Why should I continue to cripple myself if I can't win?
Right.
It's funny. And it's the exact opposite now with the, you know, the Raiders and the Patriots are the two teams.
Right.
Moss wanted out.
Right.
The head coach in Oakland is Lane Kiffin, who's 27 years old, first-time head coach, and it's just two franchises of flip-flops there.
You know, Moss could do it because of free agency.
Yeah, and we're on board with you, too. We don't think Moss is going to be a problem. But as a former athlete, when you watch today's NFL, what really is there anything that really bothers you, like certain players or anything that you see in today's NFL that you can't stand being a former athlete?
I think the one thing that really kind of bothers me that really started during the time that I was playing is, you know, when players do something during the game and you know, they start showboating. Of all the things that I probably don't like that I see is there's much more self-promotion during the game. You know, when the guys get up and start doing their dances or, you know, a guy makes a sack and he's, you know, showboating around or, you know, that's just not called for. And I think it detracts from the game.
Now, in your day, if as a guard, if somebody did that, would you turn around and haul off on them?
not during the play, but if I got a shot at him, yeah, I'd take it.
Do you ever have anything to say to Mark Gastineau?
You know what's funny? You know, everybody talks about Mark, and he was a Hollywood guy, but what, you know, and Mark was a great pass rusher, real good quickness, but if we were short yardage situation, you know who we attacked? Mark Gastineau.
Yeah.
Because that was a guy we always knew we could get 2 or 3 yards off of on the running game.
Yeah.
You know, and our whole philosophy, especially when Jim Ringo was our offensive line coach, was, you know, those little quick guys like a Randy White, LT, Gastineau, any of those quick guys, those are the guys that you attack on the running game because they're the weak links.
Yeah.
And, you know, it wasn't in an era then where you had so much, you know, specialization, and they had to play the whole game. So,
right.
You know, we could attack those guys.
Freddie billed you as the only true Patriots Hall of Famer, and I know it's going to be a biased opinion, but what do you think about Andre Tippett and the fact that, you know, he advanced to another round this year in the voting for the Hall of Fame, but still hasn't gotten in? Is he, you know, a lot of people say it was Lawrence Taylor and Andre Tippett was 1A behind him. Do you believe that? Or?
No, I don't. I believe it was the other way around. Okay. Be quite honest with you.
Okay.
You know, I had this conversation with Belichick a little bit. I don't think he liked it because he was the LT's coach. But I really do believe Andre was a better player all around. Mm-hmm. I think LT had great quickness and great speed. He could pursue well. But I think Andre had more tenacity. I think he was a tougher guy, and people feared him more. You know, just coming off the ball against Andre, you know you better brace up.
Right.
Whereas LT, all you worried about was him getting around you.
Right.
You weren't scared of him. And I think, you know, as a football player, you look at the guys who are mentally and physically tough, and I think Andre was physically and mentally tougher than LT. You know, there were a lot of guys that I played with who didn't get the recognition that they deserve. And I thought, for instance, you know, Steve Nelson was a great ball player. He's a guy that should be included in that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I look at the people that were in the Hall of Fame now that are in that era, there were, you know, Lambert and Singletary. They were great guys because they had great defensive lines and nobody could get to them, and all they had to do was pursue and make tackles.
Right.
Whereas, you know, Nelly was from the old school where he'd have to take on a blocker and then make the tackle.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and you can bear this out if you look at the Pro Bowls. Because when Singletary and Lambert went to the Pro Bowl, they didn't have great games. The reason why is because they had to take on blockers.
Mm-hmm.
And you see then, you know, how a player's made. Is he made because of his individual talent, or is he made because
right.
of the team that he's on?
Sure.
And that's a big impact. And as you know, if you look at the number of Hall of Famers that are off of teams that have won a Super Bowl and the number of teams, the guys in the Hall of Fame that aren't on Super Bowls, man, it's a lot. There's not very many guys that made it in the Hall of Fame that weren't a Super Bowl
right.
player.
Yeah, no, that definitely influences the voting. There's no doubt.
Oh, yeah,
about
it's a bias.
Yeah, it's too bad. And, you know, back even then, you were still dealing with the AFL-NFL bias. You know, there was still a lot of writers still around that, you know, were big NFL fans and didn't really respect the AFL. So,
well, one of my first rookie games, we played the Giants here. We played at Schaefer Stadium.
Right, right.
The high school stadium next door.
Man, you know, I'll tell you a story about that a little bit later. Remind me. But we walked in, and we're playing the Giants. And there were actually more Giant fans at the game, New Englanders who were Giant fans, than there were Patriot fans.
Sure.
And I was shocked. And it was really kind of a funny thing.
Yeah, for a while, that was the only game in town before the Patriots came.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of these people grew up as Giants fans.
And it was a better brand of football, too.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it.
Yeah.
You know, the Patriots organization prior to Fairbanks hadn't been competitive.
Yeah.
And so people naturally, New England fans, I laugh at them. They are great sports fans. They think they're better than they are. But the New England sports fans are actually, I think they're fans of winners.
Mm.
I think there's two things that I say about the New England sports fan. They love winners, and they love people who are blue collar workers.
Yeah.
You know, I think those are the two attributes that they look at.
Right.
You know, you see a guy that plays and really they say, you know, he's busting his butt. He's doing everything he can.
Yeah, well, look at this, you know, Bill Russell, Larry Bird, Bobby Orr. These aren't the flashy. These are, you know, the blue-collar guys.
Blue-collar workers, yeah. That's what they are. And that's what they like. And I think Tom Brady's going to fall. He falls into that category, too.
Well, now that he's doing a supermodel.
Well, yeah.
I don't know. He might be more the Joe Namath type now.
Now that he's in New York and right. all the, you know, he's changing his thing. But when he was a blue-collar guy when he first
came. Oh, yeah. He came, you know, as long as he doesn't forget where he came from.
Hey,
yeah,
John, he'll be all right. You were talking about the guys you used to go after when you wanted to run the ball. Who's the toughest guy you ever played against?
Oh, gosh. You have to throw that into a big pie. There's no one guy. You also have to categorize it by, what they do. I think, if you look at the run guys, you look at Ernie Holmes, Refrigerator Perry, they're just, so big and strong. There's just, it's like trying to move a house. Pass rush, I was against, played against,
how was Klecko?
Page.
Guys like him.
Oh, he was all around. Yeah. He was tough. Howie Long and Klecko were the all around guys that, the only way they'd quit is to shoot them. But Alan Page, Randy White were the pass rusher guys, outside backers. I thought Clay Matthews was a great player. He had my number. Jackson, was a great player at Denver. Inside backers. I mean, I played in front of Dick Butkus, my rookie year, second year somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And a guy, you talk about a guy that I was 6'3 or so before I played him, and I lost about a half an inch after I got through the game. I mean, the guy could really pound it. Yeah. So I played against some great guys.
Well, we talk about the old stadium, and I want to remind you about that story that you want to tell us, but I remember, I always think that this team never really did you right when they had that day for you, because it came in the wake of that whole Lisa Olsen thing.
Yeah.
And there was a big distraction when they brought you out in halftime. It was just not the right day to honor you. But I think I mentioned it. We're building this Hall of Fame here,
right?
And that's where you're going to finally have your due in this place. You're going to be honored the right way at this place.
No, I think I've had my due. I mean, I've been treated so well by Mr. Kraft, by you. By the whole Patriot organization. You're
trying to make up for it.
I've been treated very well.
Yeah.
And so, I'm just glad that, that people may think I've contributed a little bit to the organization and added maybe, some sort of character to it. So I just appreciate what they've done.
You mentioned.
And I enjoy being a part of it now. It just tickles me to death.
That's great.
You mentioned how not just you, but a lot of players in that early 80s, late 70s had contract disputes and tried to look to get out of town. Some did get out of town.
Yep. Lost a lot of great players.
But you were talking about relatively small money. How do you look at it now when a guy like Asani Samuel is, franchise tag $7.79 million and may or may not be here July 20, whatever, when training camp opens, because he doesn't think that's enough. What's your view on the money today and the holdouts and all that?
Well, let me give you maybe a highlight of what the difference is, okay? Now, when I first – my total package, I was fourth pick overall.
Yep.
My total package was $206,000 for 4 years. It was a $50,000 signing bonus, and then my salaries were 30, 35, 40, and 46. Now, translate that in today's dollars. If you look at inflation, it's going to basically be about three and a half times, somewhere in that range, of what it was then. So you're talking, $700,000 in today's dollars.
It's still not much.
No, it's basically 10 times. If I were to come out and be picked fourth overall, I'd probably sign, $15 million signing bonus and probably 10 a year or something like that.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
I think what has happened now is the players are getting, you still got to remember the players are only getting what's called reportable income, a percentage of that. And the biggest dollars that are in NFL properties, that's where the big dollars are. And they're not getting a piece of that. So players are beginning to get their due. I think right now in my retirement package, I get for most of my career, I got $200 per month per year. I think I got like 4 years at $250 a month per year. Current players are getting $750 a month per year.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's there's some huge changes, and they're getting some.
Would you be in favor of in limiting rookie contracts and shifting some of those dollars to the veterans, and you know, so that guys that are in the league have a chance to make more, and limiting what a rookie can make in his first, you know, contract?
I've always believed that contracts should be merit based. I believe everything should be merit based. Unfortunately, in our society today, that's not the way it works. You know, it's who you know rather than what
right.
you know. And it's not always the case that merit gets the job. And, but I believe, you know, I'd always thought whether this would work or not as a person who would be like a general manager or negotiator. I always thought, you know, one way I may be doing it was signing a kid for small dollars as far as a base, but give him a lot of incentives, you know, playing time incentives, things like that. And the way it would work is not only does he get those incentives for that year, but it's an add-on to his next year's salary.
Mm-hmm.
Then you do it the next year and do it the next year. That way you're constantly raising his salary based on merit and how he performed the last year. So he gets a double hit. He gets a hit based on that year's performance, and it's an add-on to the following year's salary. And I thought that was always a way of getting it done. Whether that would work, I don't know, but.
Agents will never go for it. Agents want the upfront money.
You don't think so?
That's how they get, paid.
Right, right, right.
And they have a lot of pull.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do.
So, we want to thank you for coming on today. What's the story that you had about the old stadium? Do you remember?
That's very interested in that.
Well, I know. You can say remind us, so I'm reminding
well,
you.
Well, I can only talk about two differences. How much time we got?
As much as you need.
Yeah. I think the one thing, you know, it was funny. When we first, it was myself, Sam Cunningham, and Daryl Stingley, who were all drafted in the first round my rookie year. So we came up to a 1776 club meeting, and I remember I'd toured the stadium and seen the facilities here, and I was really kind of disappointed.
Yeah,
because I played it
coming from Alabama.
Right. I played at Alabama, where Coach Bryant had the philosophy: if you can't do something first class, don't do it at all.
Right.
And all of a sudden, I'm sitting here and we're looking at it, and we went to a that club, and they newspaper guys looked at me and said, "Well, what does it feel like to play in front of 55,000 people?" And you know, on the stands and national TV. And I looked at him and I said, well, it won't be too disappointed. Because, I mean, we were playing in front of 80,000
right,
people.
Right. Yeah.
And it was just it was really a step down when I came down here from playing college ball. But,
yep.
You know, the other thing I wanted to talk about you know, is watching this mini camp. It's so funny and watching the schedule coming year. When we came, you know, I was looking at the number of kids that were here. And I remember when I came, we probably had 60 to 70 kids trying out during my rookie camp. You know, we got drafted in end of January. We had our first mini camp in March down in Tampa. And there were 80 guys, 90 guys there. It was unbelievable. And it was just so different. And when we went, then we had mini camps. We did all that thing. When we finally, when 2-a-day started, actual camp, we reported to camp the Sunday after the 4th of July. And we had 8 weeks of 2-a-days. When I first started, there were no days off.
Wow.
None, unless the coach wanted it. And you look at what they've got now, and I said, man, what a cakewalk.
Yeah.
I
mean,
it's more really money cool. And less work.
Well, you know, but the thing is you had more people doing it. So you, in those days, you could work yourself into shape a little bit.
Right.
Whereas today, man, you better come to camp and you better be in shape.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. So that's the other thing. There's some things.
All right.
So one last question before you go. Okay. Nick Saban.
Yeah,
what do you think? Nick Saban at Alabama, good, bad, indifferent?
I'll tell you what he's brought to the organization, which I think is great, and that's discipline.
Yeah.
They've got a kid at Alabama that was a freshman last year. His name's Andre Smith, and people better watch him. He's going to be a great if his attitude stays good, he's going to be a great athlete. He's got all the tools I've ever seen for an offensive lineman. He's huge. I mean, it's like, you know, I went and shook his hand. He's man. He's a, you know, he's a man child. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's unbelievable. Got great feet. He can dance. He's strong. He's got the tools. But the trouble is, I saw him at the beginning of the year last year. He was a great athlete, great technique, great conditioning. But as the year went on, all of a sudden I saw he was built more like I am. You know, his belly's hanging off the belt. You know, he's getting fat. He's slowing down. He's not in shape. So, you know, what I saw was a lack of discipline.
Right.
Well, all of a sudden now this spring you see pictures of him and watch the sprint. You know, they had, 92,000 people attend the A-Day game in Alabama. I mean, go on, guys. Right. It's religion, you know. Alabama's religion. But what Saban's done is he's flat-bellied now. And so you're seeing that element of discipline on the team that wasn't there before. And
element of fear. Fear of God.
Well, yeah, there's two things that motivate people, fear and greed.
Yeah.
And, you know, Saban's bringing a little bit of fear there. And, you know, when I met Andre at a little function here a while back, I looked at him and I said, Andre, you don't understand. I said, in 3 or 4 years, you're going to be a multimillionaire. I said, why would you eat yourself out of the game?
Right.
You know, keep cake, care of yourself. You know, you get drafted, you play a few years, you got life by the tail, brother.
Yeah.
You know, and don't waste it. Don't waste it.
At a school like Alabama, I know they've been down a little bit recently, is it as easy as just getting the right coach there? Because you would think the recruiting would just come itself. People would be falling over backwards to get to a program like Alabama.
Well, yes and no, but Auburn has right now gotten such a great program that and they've kind of won it for, 5 years in a row now? And so a lot of the kids are now are going more toward Auburn because, you know, everybody gravitates to a winner.
Right.
And it's been real tough now for Alabama folks to get that going. You know, there was a real time there where they had a couple of coaches who weren't of good character. And, you know, that hurt the team. I think Mike Shula did a great job coming into Alabama and restoring character and integrity to the program. I think now that they've done that, Saban's going to bring the discipline back. And I think he had a good recruiting year. And I think, yes, I think there'll be a lot of kids that want to go there. But, you know, the problem with recruiting in colleges now is I want to maybe talk a little of my frustration. You know, The thing and one of the bad things about football now is whether it's in a lot of the high schools, state associations, but especially NCAA, they've restricted coaches from being around their players so much that the coaches can't teach technique to these kids. And these kids, you see them, they come out of college without technique.
Right.
And it would be like telling your English professor when you're a freshman, you know, you can't deal with your kid except during classroom hours, and you can't tutor him at any other time, and he can get no extra help. Well, that's not fair to the kid that's going to major in English, just like it's the way that it's not fair to the kid that's going to major in football.
Mm-hmm. Right, and they are majoring in football, let's face it.
They are, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's no question about it. And that's, I mean, yes, you want to get them an education. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say that education is not important and that's not the first priority. It is. But it should be more fair and balanced in the approach, and the academians should kind of look at that a little bit.
One of our emailers, Mike, writes in, "Hello, Hogg. You're my favorite player of all time. I'd like to thank you for your superstar career as a Patriot. I would like to see the current Patriots wear the throwback uniform and helmet from your time period at least once this season. I believe with the death of Darryl Stingley, the Patriots should definitely wear the old uniform at least once this season in his memory. Is there anything the Patriots alumni can do to influence this action? Thanks for the memories and have a great day."
Well, it's my understanding they're going to do that. Isn't that happening already?
I don't know. I think they might be, yeah.
Yeah, I heard that they're going to do a throwback. I don't know if it's next year or the following year.
Yeah.
But I heard that that's going to happen and that will be kind of a consistent thing from now on out.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, that's great.
Good.
You've already influenced them.
That's right.
Well, I don't know about that, but I mean, you know, there's a lot of people that like the old red uniform and stuff.
I personally think that the Patriots should go back to the red jersey with the new logo. I think people would buy that off the shelves like crazy.
I agree.
Well, you laugh about it, but as a player, when you walk out and do your warm-ups, you know, you're looking at the other teams, you're getting fired up. And I can always remember watching, there are certain teams that I thought were a little more intimidating than others.
Yeah.
You know, Dallas, when you looked at their uniforms, always a great team. They weren't intimidating. The Dolphins uniform wasn't intimidating. But the old Oakland uniform, yeah, that old black
Bears,
and silver,
Steelers.
The Bears, yeah, the Steelers, yeah. The Rams, you know, there was just certain uniforms that just said, huh. God, they're, you know, it just.
Well, they should probably consult with players a little bit more, yeah, when they come up with these designs.
Well, right? Red is, Tiger Woods always wears red on Sundays because, right, it's a dominating, fierce color or whatever when he wants to win a tournament.
Yeah. Right. And it all goes back to money, though.
Right. Yeah. It's what they can sell. Yeah. That's the big issue. What they can sell in the pro shop, not really what the players,
right,
can wear.
Well, I was talking to, I can't.
Ken Flanders?
No, the guy that's the head of NFL property, Dave Wintergrass.
Okay.
And, you know, this was a long time ago, and they had that year where they every team had their throwback.
Yeah.
He said they doubled their revenues that year from licensing. So, yeah, it'll help out if they start doing that a little bit more.
Okay. Well, John Hanna, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks a lot.
This is a treat for us and for all our listeners. So.
Well, I had a great time. I enjoy reminiscing, you know, it's nothing like going back and lying about your career.
Yeah, but with you, it's not lying. When Tip comes down, it's some tips in there.
Don't say that. He might do a karate chop on you.
That's true. I'm more afraid of him than you right now.
Absolutely.
Didn't he lock you in an office once?
He closed the door in an office and said, take one shot, but that's all you get.
Hey,
no chance.
He was like that on the field, too. You know, you always kind of were a little cautious around Tip. You didn't want to make him mad.
You don't
know
when he's going to snap.
Yesterday, he told me he could kill me with his thumb and not leave a bruise.
That's right.
I believed him.
I do too.
All right, John Hanna, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with your emails here in PFW in Progress.
This is Andre Tippin. That's not what we're looking for.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Miles and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Breaks a tackle, drives it upfield, to the 10, to the 5, touchdown, Benjamin Watson!
From a first-round draft pick in 2004 to owning the longest touchdown reception in Patriots playoff history, Benjamin Watson has become a standout for the three-time Super Bowl champs.
One of the best I've ever seen.
Now you can get an official mini replica helmet exclusively from the New England Patriots signed by Benjamin Watson free. His authentic mini helmet comes complete with a chin strap, receiver face mask, and Ben Watson's autograph. All you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait to apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Benjamin Watson. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to your first 400 of qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
Oh, now a shot! Unbelievable! 3-2! Taylor Twellman!
Wear what the pros wear, exclusively from the Revolution Pro Shop. Conveniently located at Gillette Stadium, it's the perfect place to get all of your official New England Revolution apparel. The Revolution Pro Shop features apparel made by Adidas, the official apparel provider of the MLS. Everything from jerseys and sweatshirts to hats and jackets. Give your jersey a kick by having the Pro Shop customize it with the name and number of your favorite player, or the name and number of your choice. With a huge selection of Revolution items for men, women, kids, and infants, the Revolution Pro Shop has something for everyone. The Revolution Pro Shop at Gillette Stadium is open to the public from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Can't get to the stadium? The Revolution Online Pro Shop is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at revolutionsoccer.net. Get the gear your favorite player or coach wears on the field at the Revolution Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
Jamarcus Russell was the first pick. Detroit takes another wide receiver, and the Dolphins don't take Brady Quinn. If you're having trouble figuring out the NFL draft, PFW's Tom Casale has the answers.
I think both guys at 24 would be stealing. And they're not falling like rocks. That's all internet crap. There's no way Branch is going to be there at 24. None.
With the 33rd pick in the NFL draft, the Cardinals select Alan Branch, defensive tackle, Michigan.
Well, he was right about Corey Dillon and Lawrence Maroney, so let's talk running backs.
Round three, Chris Henry, the running back of Arizona.
Listen, we should talk about him. This guy stunk in college. He's an upright runner. Now all of a sudden he's got a nice physique. He goes and runs a fast 40, and everyone's thinking he's going to go in round three. Forget about it. Round five at the earliest.
With their first selection in the second round, the Tennessee Titans select running back Chris Henry from Arizona.
So if your mock draft has scribbles all over it and you're convinced the guy in Miami misheard Quinn and wrote Ginn, you're not alone. And don't worry, there's always next year, and Tom Casale will be there to break it down.
At 15, I think that's where you make the move, because those teams should all be interested in
it. So if he's there at 15, you trade for him?
You got it.
What's the trade?
I don't know how to work out trades. I'm a scout. I'm not Pioli. His job is to take care of that kind of thing.
PFW in progress.
I just don't understand football, I guess.
All right, we know that for sure. Some great sound bites from draft weekend. We'll never forget this draft weekend. A big blog weekend. It was huge. You know, there were a lot of people writing into that blog.
Yeah, it worked out well.
It was really good. All right, John Hanna, that was great.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, we got.
I could have gone another hour with him.
Absolutely.
Plenty of questions.
And
we should have him back sometime.
Well, one of the things, you know, I mentioned the museum to him, and I don't know if a lot of fans realize, but the Patriots are building this museum/Hall of Fame. It's going to be called the Hall at Patriot Place. And, of course, there's going to be a Hall of Fame section where John's going to have his stuff there, as well as the other Patriots that are in the Hall of Fame. But prior to that room, there's going to be a smaller room with real comfortable chairs and everything. And you'll sit down in these chairs, and with special directional speakers, you'll just start hearing stories from these alumni, talking to each other, just reminiscing, you know, war stories. It's going to be a great place to just kind of sit there and listen to these kind of stories, and that's sort of the foyer on the way to the Hall of Fame.
They have a ton of stories. I mean, we're fortunate enough to work with Andre Tippett, who, I mean, you can't, once he, when he walks down the hall, you can't stop him quick enough to talk to him. He's got a ton of stories.
Right. So I'll never forget, and I've been trying to find this photo. It was in Sports Illustrated. It wasn't a cover photo, but you open it up, and you know how Sports Illustrated, in the beginning, they have those big photos? They had a two-page spread of Hanna with a defensive lineman on either arm just opening up a hole. And I remember I wasn't even living in New England at the time. I was living in New Jersey, and I'm saying, wow, that's cool. So I've always, like, he's always been like a guy that I thought – you know, the best at his position.
Mm-hmm. Except he thinks he'd be a fullback today.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's funny when he said that he might be. You know, I don't know what kind of.
There's not too many 265-pound offensive linemen anymore, that's for sure.
Let's see. Andy says, I think we should replace Fred with John. He's been freaking awesome.
I agree.
I can't even get any work done today. I would like to know what John thinks Mike Elgin's chances are of making the team, or even if he has seen him work. If John is gone, what do you guys think? It sounds like Tom liked him.
I was going to ask him about him, but I didn't know if he wanted to get into the specific players,
because
he didn't sound like he wanted to really break them down. But
although he's still mad at Hilliard for
Puka. And that was embarrassing. Fred and I were.
But what if he was sick?
But I don't think Fred. He wasn't sick.
Okay.
If you saw him do the drills, even the drills you didn't have to run, he was lackadaisical. He wasn't catching
up. Then cut him.
And if you puke, you puke. That's one thing. But it's like Tom says, the other stuff. And this is a guy that played for Bear Bryant. You completed your task. You didn't. Have you seen that movie when, you know, the guys are dying of heat stroke to do what they're supposed to do? I mean, that's the mentality he brings to the game.
What's the difference between Bear Bryant and Belichick? Not much. You know what I mean? I'm not sure. I don't think Belichick was sitting there going, hey, it's okay. He grew up. That's not the way he coaches.
Okay.
And we agree. We would love to replace you, Fred, with John Hanna.
What else?
The only thing we didn't need was him saying, oh, Fred, you've been great to me over the years. We didn't need that.
Well, you know, I'm sorry. I do a lot of things that you don't know about. You know?
I'm just kidding.
You know, but I thought it was great.
He's a little bitter towards the organization pre-craft, huh?
Well, I mean, he was known at one time. He said, like, in 83, he was ready to quit. You know,
there's a little bit of him at some level that says, why couldn't it have been like this when I played?
Absolutely.
Why couldn't it have been a first-rate organization?
And who wouldn't think that?
But see, now, the only thing I would disagree with him on is he said he wanted to go to the Raiders, okay? Now, if he goes to the Raiders and they stink, that's his fault. Randy Moss wanted out of Minnesota to go to Oakland. Right. He wasn't shipped to Oakland.
Yeah, but okay.
He wanted to go
and,
there.
And you're right.
But so you have to take that
into consideration. But there was a different motivation then. Back then it was, I want to be in the
right.
Raiders.
That's cooler. Fred, he you always think we're taking a shot at the Patriots here. I'm not taking a shot at the Patriots.
No, I'm not even, Patriots aren't even in my mind. I'm talking about Randy Moss's mindset trying to get out of Minnesota is not the same reason why he's trying to get out of the Raiders.
I agree with you.
He wasn't necessarily trying to get on a winner. He just hated, he just wanted to get on the Raiders because it was cooler and so on.
Right, and I'm just saying though, in general, you can't really say, well,
Yeah, no, I
understand in Oakland things went bad. They brought in an offensive coordinator who was a mayor of some city in Idaho who hadn't coached for 20 years. They brought in Art Schell who they had to dust off after 12 years. So I understand that frustration could build. The only problem I have, and I like Moss and I want him here, is that just try a little harder. At least make it look like you're trying. Don't
and
Jerry Porter shouldn't be coming out saying we're not trying.
Bitch and moan, but always give 100%.
That's the only problem.
That I you can't.
And I don't think
that.
Hannah probably went about it that way.
Oh,
I'm sure when he was on the field, he still gave it.
That's right.
He got.
But
he
never admitted that desperation or whatever that sets in at the end of your career when you realize you're no longer the great football player. What am I going to be?
Right.
Do I have a lasting legacy and all that? So I wonder if Moss has reached some sort of point, some crossroads in his own mind.
Right, and I thought the interesting thing he brought up was Brett Favre.
Yeah.
Because where's everyone killing Brett Favre?
Right.
When other players do this, and I hate to say it, but usually black players, they get killed in the media. But when Lord Favre does it, where's ESPN? Where's the outcry of he's being greedy? Why is he slamming his team in the media?
Right. Right,
because I thought that was a good analogy he made with Favre.
I think you're seeing a little bit from Favre, but he quickly came and had the statement on the website saying that he was just frustrated and so on and so forth. You know, but I mean, Favre is a god in Green Bay. He is the
package. But ESPN isn't in Green Bay,
right?
I understand Green Bay. I'm talking about the national media.
Yeah, he's talking. You know, when TO does something, the national media jumps on it.
They're following him around with cameras. We're just waiting for him to screw up. The last 3 or 4 years, and you can ask Mike Felger, Brett Favre hasn't been a choir boy in Green Bay, so I think his enough's enough.
Yeah. All right, webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Again, we just had the John Hanna, so if you join us at around 1 o'clock, you definitely want to go back after the show and listen to the archive, download it to your iPod or whatever. And
just like Hanna does every morning.
Yeah. Right. Good to know, but
we really got to clean this show
up. I was going to say,
we have Hall of Famers listening.
you want to check out John. He came and stayed with us for about 40 minutes, and it was great. Probably could have kept talking with him, but of course, we want to get to your email, so I should just do that.
But he'll be around this year.
Oh, yeah, he'll be around this year. He's going to do a lot of stuff with the Patriots. If you're a club seat holder, you're going to see him in the club before every home game, so it's going to be cool.
And with us, though, isn't he going to maybe do some stuff with us?
Yeah, some stuff with us.
A variety of different.
Absolutely. So
it's
good to have John Hanna back in the fold. He's our Hall of Famer. He should be here.
It is good because he's been kind of out of it for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, people off the landscape, I'll say, of people's minds and the team history.
Yep.
It's nice to have him back around. It sounds like he's making money and doing well on other interests
as
well.
Oh, yeah. He's always been a smart business guy as well. All right,
I found it interesting, though. I'm sure he's not as good at business as he was as a guard. You know what I mean? He talked about what are you going to do that you're second best at in this world.
Right, right.
Some of us are just trying to find one thing we're good at.
Right. Still trying to find that one thing. Matt is a transplanted New Englander living in Oregon. He says, I've heard you guys mention several ways that Moss's presence on the field is going to open up other players for success. Could this result in a situation where Moss doesn't get as many balls as he'd like and ends up unhappy and starts dogging it? As happy as I am about them bringing Moss in, his ego/attitude makes me nervous as hell. We watched T.O. destroy a pretty good Eagles team like a cancer, and I worry that Moss could come in and do that here. Granted, the leadership T.O. was surrounded by in Philly pales in comparison to what Moss will have here. I'm sure he'll be on his best behavior at the start of the year, but do you guys think if things could go south, if he's used as a decoy too often? I have a lot of faith in the more classy guys on the team to lead him in a positive direction, but I'm still a little bit nervous.
So a couple of things there I'd like to argue. One, I don't think the Eagles are that far from the Patriots because I think they're the second best organization in football behind New England.
But the leadership is
but they
failing
they have
because
Trotter,
McNabb has shown
but,
him.
Yeah, but Trotter was
the
there.
The QB has shown himself to be.
Yes, I understand
kind of
that, but
DB.
I'm saying they did have veterans there that have gone at NFC Championship games, so I don't think it was that huge of a difference like you could say with the Patriots and some other teams. The second is Terrell Owens was fine in year one. He didn't do anything. So I think for 1 year, you're okay. Actually, TL really didn't do that much in Dallas once the season started. There was a little drama there before. Now I think Dallas has to watch themselves because it's year two. So I think if you get Moss for 1 year, you're not going to have any problems.
That's all you got.
Right. And I mean, second, the catching passes part, if they're winning, I don't think it becomes a problem. They go on a four-game losing streak, and Moss has three receptions during those 4 weeks. Then I think you get nervous.
I don't think Moss is the, you know, T.O. is insane. I think he has really a problem. I think Moss is selfish, was a little immature. I don't think, like you said, if the Patriots are winning, he's too smart to know if he starts talking then. I mean, it's just going to be bad for him. You know, so he knows that this year he's got to, you know, play team football.
And he's still going to get enough passes thrown his way.
I'm very, very confident that he will be fine.
And you cut him. Yeah. Because in that little scenario, if he's not catching passes, well, then cut him. It's no great. I think the worst case scenario is if for some reason he is your offense, if he is, you know, the first six games, he's got some ridiculous number of touchdowns, catches, and he's the focal point of your offense, and then for some reason he gets upset. Well, now you're disrupting the offense. But if he's upset because he's not playing a big enough role, I'll cut him. Yeah. And I'll go with Dante Stoll, you know, whatever.
Right. Let's see. Mike is from Denver. He says, congrats to Gary on his big engagement to the jailbait. Wow. Nothing says romantic like an occasional soundbite to set the mood. Question, when Gary gets arrested, are you going to backfill his position? Sounds like a pretty good gig considering you only have to push a few buttons and be the beneficiary of an occasional free lunch. What a no-talent-ass clown. Wow. Just kidding with you, Gary. They bought this on you when they asked us to email in last week. Did you do that? Did you set Gary up?
Yeah.
Gary was complaining that no one cared about his engagement. You know, so now we have to plan a party for him and all this stuff.
Engagement party.
I was not complaining.
You were.
All right, so Mike's question is, my buddies and I fly out once a year to see a game from Denver, and last year we had the horrible luck of selecting the Jets game where the weather, not to mention the overall team performance, were less than stellar. I think this year we might try for the San Diego game because the Sox and the Yankees are that same weekend. But tell me what you gentlemen think. If you had to pick one game next year to see live, which would it be?
Home?
Tom wants to go to Dallas.
San Diego. You're on the right boat there. Go to San Diego.
Because there's emotion. There's the whole LT. They're still pissed off about the
and
dance.
And even if San Diego slides this year, like I think they might, it won't be early in the year. It'll be later in the year when Norv Turner's coaching.
Yeah, they'll still
style.
Have the momentum a little early. Yeah.
They'll be fine then. So that'll be a good game. It'll be an emotional game. Pretty good weather, we imagine. So that'd be the game.
By the way, I love the show. I've noticed that once I get done listening to the podcast, I walk around work for the rest of the day verbally abusing my coworkers and try to score a free lunch. Needless to say, I'm a better person because of your exceptional guidance.
Thank you.
So there you go. That's Mike in Denver. Good email. Ashton from Virginia. What do you guys think about the Pats and Colts rivalry today? You touched on it a little last week when you talked about the 49ers and Cowboys back in the day. It's also widely known that people have compared Brady to Montana. I said before that the throw that Brady threw to Caldwell, the one he dropped, looked a lot like the throw Montana threw to Clark against the Cowboys also in a championship game. Try and compare them if you can. ESPN seems to think it's gotten bigger than the Yankees and the Red Sox rivalry in such a short amount of time. From a fan point of view, at least on my part, I think we fans respect Manning and the Colts, but also hate him and hope he breaks his leg on many commercials.
That's Fred.
If I could ever meet Manning, I would joke with him about the rivalry as a Pats fan because he seems cool enough to deal with that. But if I saw him walking into Gillette Stadium to play us, I'd be the guy yelling, I know you and Marvin Harrison are secret lovers. P.S. Did Mike Richardson run the 40? If he did, what did he run?
Well, I think the rivalries are pretty similar because the Cowboys and 49ers aren't natural rivals. They were rivals twice because they were both good. It happened during the catch in that era and then again in the 90s because they were both good at the same time. But right now when the 49ers and Cowboys play, nobody really cares.
Right.
And I think the Colts and Patriots are in that same boat where I know they used to be in the AFC East together, but they were pretty much terrible together for all those years. So right now they're rivals because they're both good. I think 5 to 10 years down the road when the two quarterbacks leave, it won't necessarily be such a big rival.
And to me, it's nowhere near Yankees-Red Sox.
Nothing.
Not even in the same league.
I think there's only one or two other rivalries in all of the entire sports world that you could put in that category probably.
I'm not sure there's too many.
Well, they've died off.
But let's be honest.
It used to be Celtics-Lakers. That's died off.
There's a hate I mean, the front office
have to go
hate
to college.
The other front
Canadians,
office.
Bruins,
right.
College,
I think
Auburn, Alabama,
yeah.
Duke, North Carolina.
Yeah, because
those
this is
there.
Players, fans, coaches, executives. You know, it goes all the way top to bottom. The organizations are in direct competition in every facet of yeah. their business.
And professional sports, that's by far and away
yeah,
the
no
biggest
question.
Rivalry.
There's too much sharing in football. Among organizations to get that much of a rivalry going where they hate each other.
But, yeah, it's just.
Plus, it's the whole Boston, New York thing. You
right.
can't beat
it's
that.
The cities. Yeah. I mean, let's be. It's Indianapolis.
yeah.
All right. Michael from Madison, Wisconsin.
Which is the best city I've ever been to, but.
Congratulations, Gary, on your engagement. Way to go. You found someone to take you. Anyway, you guys never mentioned anything about the passing of Daybird Halberstam. Didn't he write Belichick's biography, which was a good read, by
we
the way?
We mentioned something. It was when Fred started a joke.
He was going to tell a joke about him and then remembered he was dead.
I was just using him as an example. Did Belichick mention him at the time of his death or recognize him in any way other way since then? Yes, he
did. Well, here's somebody who doesn't listen to the show, nor do they go to the website, right. because there was a release put out by Belichick, right. and we mentioned it on here. And I believe, Fred, you read the release on this show.
Right. So, yes, they did mention
after
it.
After telling the joke.
And Belichick mentioned how it was great to know him and to work with him and what a great guy he was. So, let's see. Ed from Virginia. Everyone seems to think that Mike Vrabel is going to start at inside linebacker next year, but I don't think so. I think that Bill thinks highly of Eric Alexander, which was evident when he started him on the inside in the AFC Championship. We all know that he failed, but I don't think it was entirely his fault. He went from playing a few snaps a game to being a starter. That is too big of a jump. I think if Eric Alexander has a good training camp, he will be the starting on the inside beside Bruschi. I also think that the Patriots are going to re-sign.
Who's not starting?
No way. You can stop this email if you want.
Okay. Who's not starting?
Maybe in week 10. Eric Alexander may be starting, but opening day, you're telling me it's not going to be Vrabel, Bruschi, Thomas, right. and Colvin?
And oh, by
no
the way.
Way,
if they're so in love with Eric Alexander, why are they signing Junior Seau?
Well, he says on the inside, it'll be a mixture of Seau, Alexander, and Bruschi. Colvin will just be a situational pass rusher.
He won't like to hear that.
I think this is Eric's year in college. It took him until his senior year to become a productive starter, and this will be his fourth year in the NFL. I hope he can take it to the next
so
level.
So in 8 years, he's had one good season. I'll pass.
Okay.
Listen.
The only thing I agree with that email is it's not Eric Alexander's fault.
I
he was
agree.
Put in a position
yes.
where he couldn't win in the AFC title game.
But
that was a bad coaching move.
The bottom line is Mike Vrabel will be the starting inside linebacker on opening day next to Teddy Bruschi.
And he's played pretty well when he's played there
yes.
over the last couple of years. He has experience. They know what he can do. Why would you try to mess that up?
Yeah. And I'm not saying maybe Alexander has a bigger role. Maybe
right.
he's more into a rotation. But opening day starter,
right.
no
he
way.
May rotate. That guy might be right in the rotational yeah. different things, but...
And I think you're right, Tom. I think that, you know, because the way Belichick coaches and there's no one that matches up his guys with the offenses that he's going to play, Alexander's role in 1 week, he may not see any action.
Right.
On the next week, because, you know, they have to, on third down, they have to worry about the run a little bit more. So they want him to play that kind of linebacker slash safety role. You could see Alexander out there a little bit more. So.
Or he could get cut.
Yeah.
serious. I'm not
yeah.
joking.
Right.
He's not even a definite to make the team, really.
Yeah. Patrick in South Carolina. What's up, guys? First off, I'd like to say you guys do a great job every week on the show. And I'd also like to congratulate Andy and Paul on the new children.
Thank you.
Now let's say Ricky Williams is released by the Dolphins.
Through you, Gary. He didn't mention your engagement.
And reinstated to the NFL.
How old are these emails, Fred?
I don't know.
Ricky Williams was tested positive for smoking marijuana.
Okay.
By the way, I don't understand why that only pushes it back till September.
I don't either, but
that should be it. Go away.
Fred, just do me a favor. Let's not read the Ricky Williams emails. He'll never become a Patriot ever. Ever.
Okay, all right.
Ever.
Tom's yelling at me.
I'll quit my job if he becomes a Patriot. There's no way Belichick
no.
is going to sign somebody who has no willpower whatsoever.
No.
Just
sounds
no
like
way.
A new opening, Gary, if this ever plays out.
Sometimes I have sweets.
All right, I tried to read your email, but Tom wouldn't let me.
Okay. Fred, it's not his fault. It's yours. It's an old email.
We're down to the final two of American Idol, by the way.
And you should be reading today's emails. You don't know how to host.
I went from reading an email that's a week old, and now you want to talk American Idol?
Blake is going to get kicked off tonight.
Is that what you heard?
Seacrest!
From who?
It's the 17-year-old. 17-year-old's getting kicked off.
Philippa I don't Sparks? Think so. I think she's going to win.
No.
I think she's going to win.
No. I'm telling you.
Craig from Boxborough. Hello, A-Team and Frank Jake Steele Kirsch. I think the crackdown on all these behavior issues was great this offseason, but I'm eager to see what will be done with Mike Vick dogfighting. Quite frankly, he needs to be suspended, even if it is found out that he is not directly involved.
Why?
Was on his property.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. No, he didn't have to have known. These rich guys have a bunch of houses and posses that do all kinds of stuff. Now, I think he probably knew something about it. But if they can prove that he didn't, you're still going to suspend him? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. This must be the guy in Boxborough I don't like.
Okay.
I don't like either of them.
Well, one I like, he defends me.
Who, Mike Vick?
No, one of the Boxborough boys. There's Craig and Ben. One's good, one's bad.
All right, well, Angus.
Who knew we had two listeners in Boxborough?
Angus is writing in from Edinburgh, Scotland. Got anything to say?
No.
No, okay.
It's the Irish, I have a problem.
All right, we've heard a lot about...
Patty's coming. Drunk.
We've heard a lot about the passing game with Washington, Welker, and Stallworth and Moss, but what of the run game? It's a granted that Maroney will do his share, but I'm concerned about the Sammy Morris guy. Will he be as effective as Corey Dillon? I know some of you guys don't like Dillon, or even in his average season in 06, he gained over 1,000-plus yards, if you include the playoff games, scored a bunch of touchdowns.
Now we're making sure we have like 19 games on the schedule to get to
1,000. Very effective within the 15-yard line. Every game Dillon was given a handoff in the red zone, he seemed to score. Perfect examples would be twice in the second game at Buffalo, once against the Jets in regular season in the playoffs, three times against the Colts.
Okay, he scored. We know he scored a lot of touchdowns. We saw the stat total.
He may not have given us big yardage per game, but he gave us most important things, the touchdowns. My eventual question
is,
can Sammy Morris perform just as well, if not better, due to his past experience with the Dolphins?
Why do we have to keep repeating ourselves on the show? He doesn't need to.
He's not going to.
Lawrence Maroney is the man. He's 1,400 yards. If he's not, the Patriots won't be happy. They drafted him in the first round to be the man.
The problem with some fans is they have such a short memory. The last 2 years they had Corey Dillon, so from now on it has to be that way.
Yeah.
You know? It's just...
How about 3 years ago when it was just Corey Dillon and he ran for 1,600 yards? Who was taking the carries then?
Right,
nobody.
Right.
Sammy Morris is a backup. He's here to do a couple of things here and there. If Maroney gets hurt, maybe he can come in for two games. But like Andy's guy, Chris Brown, that's a guy, if you're out 8 to 10 weeks, that's right. Who you need. You need a Chris Brown, not a Sammy Morris.
I'd just like to bring up again Josh Tolles in Arlington, Virginia. We still love you. Thanks for lunch.
Great lunch. Great lunch.
Phenomenal. The extra boneless buffalo wings is huge, because then we don't all have to fight over it. I got my own box.
And we don't mind the one pizza. One pizza is fine.
Because they do a great job with their boneless wings. Yeah. They're phenomenal. Yeah. Well done, Papagino's. Well done, Josh. Somebody else, show them up next week by doing a better job on lunch.
Well, Doug and Blackstone keeps emailing, and I keep trying to email him back, and it gets back as undeliverable.
Doug, stop being a douchebag. Either send us food or don't.
Right.
Jeez.
And use an email address that actually works.
Yeah.
Matt from Southie. Not to dwell too much on the passing over of David Harris in the draft, but the more I think about it, the more concerns I have over the current state of the linebackers. I'm probably simplifying this, but here's my logic. Ready?
Ready.
Okay.
Well, he shouldn't worry because Eric Alexander is going to start, which means you have a pretty good player on the bench.
The receiving core is overloaded, which will probably lead to a pass-first offense. This, in turn, will lead to drives that don't eat a lot of the clock. Ultimately, this will increase the time that the Pats defense is on the field, given the age of the linebackers and the very late bye week. By the time the Colts come to Foxborough for the AFC Championship game in 08, our defense might be in shambles. Our defense was so beat up during last year's AFC Championship game that Fred could have lined up as a tight end against the Pats and probably gone over the middle for 10-yard gain. Hopefully, Maroney can carry the load this year and prevent any doomsday scenario, but as one of you mentioned, he got three different injuries in his rookie year while only carrying half the load. Paul, tell me everything's going to be okay. Well, Paul can't because he's golfing with the Northeastern Huskies today. But what do you guys think of that logic?
I think linebacker, as we've stated all along, is probably the one area that everyone's concerned about because of the injury factor. If Bruschi or Vrabel get hurt, well, Vrabel's on the bench now. He's not starting anymore. If Bruschi or Eric Alexander gets hurt, then you're going to be in a bad situation. But I don't know. I know the Patriots are 2-1 favorites to win the Super Bowl. I know on paper they have the best team. But in today's NFL, are we really expecting 30-point victories every week? Because I just don't see it.
No way.
So I don't think like this.
But let's look at it the other way. This defense set a record for points allowed last year, and they have everybody back
And see, that's,
plus a Darius Thomas.
That's the thing. I just, when you're talking about a Bill Belichick coach team, I never worry about the defense. He'll find a way. If he has to have Corey Mays in there, he'll find a way to mask the weaknesses. That's why he's the best defensive coach that I've seen. He masks weaknesses better than anybody in, well, okay, they're going to go from 14 points to 17 or 18 points.
And he identifies the other team's strengths and is able to
neutralize them. Yes.
Plus, you might have a Darius Thomas, you know, with the extra sacks, a fumble recovery here, a game-changing play there.
The plays where Banta Kane were almost there and just getting pushed out of the way, Darius Thomas will be there making that play.
And you have Seau, hopefully, in a backup role, which was he supposed to be in next year as an emergency guy. You have Eric Alexander, who people are already falling in love with.
Yeah.
So I think as much as we look at it on paper and say there are 30-somethings and there's a risk there, there's less of a risk than there was last year at this time.
And I'll also say, how many points?
Read to sleep with that comment.
How many points did they give up last year? Like 14 point something?
Yeah.
I say it'll be more around 18 or 19 this year, but they'll have many more turnovers and sacks, more big plays on defense.
Right, because it was a while before they got that going.
Yeah,
right, they had nothing last year early.
Right. Let's see. PJ says you're the best in the business, and oh yeah, hi Fred, Frank, Jake Steele. I heard you guys talking about the Stallworth Moss chemistry issue. I don't know about Moss. I don't know how Moss might handle not getting the most catches on the team, although Frank seems to think St. Randy is a great guy, so we don't have to worry about that. I do, however, have experience with Dante Stallworth being here in Philly. I have to tell you guys that he was one of the most humble, hardworking players that I've ever seen here. When I heard he left the Eagles, I was a little upset until I learned that he went to the Pats. You guys will love him. He wore number 18 here, he said by coincidence, but everyone called him the anti-T.O., who wore 81. He was fun to root for, and he was just as good a guy off the field as he was on it. The only problem with Stallworth is the hamstring. Mm-hmm. There will be days where he wouldn't even be listed on the injury report, and then on game day we turn on the TV, and he'd be on the sidelines in street clothes. It is a day-by-day injury, and if it flares up on game day, there is nothing he can do. Anyway, great show.
Yeah, it's a chronic injury. He's always had problems with the hamstrings, but I also agree, every time I've ever seen Stallworth, he seems like a nice guy.
Everybody loves him.
Yeah, I've never seen any problems with him. The only negative I've ever really heard about him is the hamstrings.
Right.
That's it.
Gary from Easton, Mass. Says, okay, so they didn't pick up a stud linebacker to get younger and quicker like I was hoping, but if Seau returns and Thomas plays as well as we all hope, and injuries are minimal, I think we've got one of the most talented rotations at the linebacker position in the NFL. With Colvin, Vrabel, and Bruschi, and yes, even Alexander, there is depth there and the potential to be a force to be reckoned with. What's your opinion?
That's about right.
Yeah, I lean more towards that than the sky is falling at linebacker.
Yeah, but the thing we're talking about with the young linebackers is 3 years down the road.
Right.
We're not really talking about this year.
Right.
We're talking about when are they going to bring those backers in where they teach. Maybe it's Pierre Woods. Maybe they like him. I don't know. But
yeah,
we haven't seen it so far.
Yeah, there's no tiering. There's no a 32-year-old, a 28-year-old, and a 26-year-old. They're all early 30s or beyond. So at some point, they're all going to get old.
No.
It's like having my car with 142,000 miles on it.
And you see,
I'm just waiting to buy a new car.
I was just thinking of something John Hanna said about the 50, 60 players. You see, the Jets have like 50 players.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, they got those ex wrestlers. Did you see that?
No, who?
Two NCAA championship wrestlers trying out. They're having like it's like what's the movie?
Does Mangini just do everything that the Patriots
Invincible.
Do?
Invincible, yeah.
I mean, so the Patriots bring in Stephen Neal, and it worked out. So Mangini's got to do the same thing.
He's smart.
He learned from
He's
the
really
best.
Smart.
You're so jealous.
Aren't you? Aren't you honored that he's trying to be like Belichick?
I guess. He's stealing all our ideas. All right, let's take a break, Gary. We'll be right back.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mile and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
breaks the tackle, drives it upfield, to the 10, to the 5, touchdown, Benjamin Watson!
From a first-round draft pick in 2004 to owning the longest touchdown reception in Patriots playoff history, Benjamin Watson has become a standout for the three-time Super Bowl champs.
One of the best I've ever seen.
Now you can get an official mini replica helmet exclusively from the New England Patriots signed by Benjamin Watson free. This authentic mini helmet comes complete with a chin strap, receiver face mask, and Ben Watson's autograph. All you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Benjamin Watson. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to your first 400 with qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
Oh, now a shot! Unbelievable! 3-2, Taylor Twellman!
Wear what the pros wear, exclusively from the Revolution Pro Shop. Conveniently located at Gillette Stadium, it's the perfect place to get all of your official New England Revolution apparel. The Revolution Pro Shop features apparel made by Adidas, the official apparel provider of the MLS. Everything from jerseys and sweatshirts to hats and jackets. Give your jersey a kick by having the Pro Shop customize it with the name and number of your favorite player, or the name and number of your choice. With a huge selection of Revolution items for men, women, kids, and infants, the Revolution Pro Shop has something for everyone. The Revolution Pro Shop at Gillette Stadium is open to the public from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Can't get to the stadium? The Revolution Online Pro Shop is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at revolutionsoccer.net. Get the gear your favorite player or coach wears on the field at the Revolution Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
In case you missed it, there's a few new additions to the PFW family.
Steve says, first, congrats to Annie and Paul for all the procreating.
Thank you.
Craig in Boxborough, congratulations to Paul and Andy on the birth of their children.
Thank you.
Late congrats to Paul and Andy on their additions to the PFW family. Good job, man.
That's right. Paul and Andy's boys can swim.
Josh in South Korea, we would like to congratulate Paul and Andy on their new additions to the family.
Thank you.
Russell from the OC says congrats to Paul and Andy. Congratulations to Paul and Andy on the baby boom.
Andy named his son to honor the greatest Tecmo Bowl athlete of all time. B-b-b-b-bowl.
Dave says congrats to Andy and your son, Jackson Hart.
Thank you.
Sawyer from Waterloo, Iowa is writing in. First, sincere congratulations for Paul and Andy.
Thank you.
And Paul's named for the greatest Tecmo player of the PFW staff. Congratulate him on the birth of Casali Douchebag Barillo.
Paul liked me so much, he named his son after my entire family.
Way to go, fellas.
Andy in Sioux City, Iowa. He says congrats to the new dads and good luck.
Baby's names have been changed to protect their identity. Tom Casali is not the real father of either baby. If he were, they'd be girls. By the way, Gary got engaged and nobody said a damn thing. I'm FDIC Equal Housing Lender.
All right, we're back. Apparently, a fat bastard's leaving a floater in there. That's the hardest I ever laughed on this show. Was when Fred goes, all right, we'll be right back. And he was gone for 20 minutes. And when he came back, Gary played that sound bite.
We didn't talk about that.
What a blowhard.
Well, you guys, they had a special event for the Fidelity Investments Club people. They had a luncheon, and Paul, Andy, and Tom sat in front and answered questions about the draft. It went pretty well.
It was supposed to be 45 minutes, but Paul's opening pushed it to about an hour and a half.
Well past an hour.
So it was fun.
It went a lot better than I thought it would. I thought we had good interaction. You know, kind of like this show where we had people just in the audience asking questions rather than emailers. You know, a good mix of fans. They had, a couple guys that aren't quite Homer Central talking about worries at receiver and linebacker, and
it was good.
It was fun. You know, there's a couple hundred people there. We got a free lunch out of the deal.
It was a big crowd.
About 250.
Yeah.
It was around 250.
250.
And we got nothing for it. Didn't even get a free lunch. Oh, yeah, we did get a free lunch, but other than that, we got nothing.
Oh, you had to go up the elevator one floor. Well, tough work.
We were putting ourselves out on the line. We pissed people off. Doing live events, we could get killed.
Yeah, someone could take a shot at me.
No kidding. Shiv party.
It would help subscriptions, I'm telling you.
If I'm dead?
Well, it'd get us on the front page, and the people would buy the paper. Let's see. Steven says, Tom, Andy, super fan, and Jake,
You can revive. That's Paul's new name. You can revive the cries for Walter Thomas after listening to you guys, Jones, all for right. the biggest player in the draft during the Draft Pod 07. We were all crushed to hear that he had signed as an undrafted rookie free
Hold
agent.
Hold on, time out, Fred.
Yes, yes.
When it's us guys and it doesn't work, you always blame me when it's me. Whenever I say something and it's wrong, it's always Tom said this, Tom said that. Don't say us guys. It was Andy Hart. Tom Casale never said anything about Walter Thomas, so get that straight right now.
Plus, Andy Hart didn't know anything about Walter Thomas except that he's 375 pounds and could do a backflip with no shoes on the beach.
Well, New Orleans released him after 13 minutes into
oh, I heard 10.
At the time, Thomas was unable to get to minute 14 of the individual conditioning drill and had to be helped off the field. He is now off the Saints roster. Apparently, there is only room for three Thomases in New Orleans. On second thought, maybe the Patriots should sign the guy that helped him off the
That's
field.
That's what I was saying. Yeah. Whoever carried him off the field should be signed.
Yeah, that was one of the funnier stories of the past weekend, was Walter Thomas lasting 12 minutes at minicamp.
Yeah, you win some, you lose some. You got to be willing to roll the dice.
Speaking of B-Lo, Logan from Boxborough says B-Lo sucks.
I agree, Logan. You're the third from Boxborough.
I was just about to watch Patriots Today with the video of Brandon Merriweather when I realized that I would have to listen to B-Lo's annoying drawl. I didn't know he had a drawl.
He's got a drawl.
I think Tom should do it so we can get an actual opinion and useful information. Even Fred would be at least excited. B-Lo just sucks.
This wow. is wow. the worst video ever made.
B-Lo taking a pounding today.
I think
today.
That's just someone who knows B-Lo.
B-Lo is lower on the totem pole than you.
B-Lo doesn't have friends that do stuff like that.
I thought everyone loved B-Lo.
No, no one.
You want to know what's funny, Fred? What? This is something I thought of yesterday, actually. When PVN left, we had all these emails saying, where is it, where is it?
Right.
It came back and no one gave a damn. No one said a word about it. Actually, we got one email that said, bring Lori back.
Right. Chris in Westbrook, Connecticut says he loves the show. It's a very important question for us. Can you give us, the fans, a list of all the music tracks that they play inside Gillette? I want to put all of them on my iPod for tailgating next
Gary,
fall.
Gary, take care of it.
Bring a pen and paper next time.
Gary, why don't you just put together a list that's downloadable on the website?
One of them is not Bodies by the Drowning Pool, which should be.
Isn't that
awful.
A...
Let the bodies
that's
hit the
floor. Papelbon's song, right,
yeah.
When he comes in?
And Gary dropped the ball.
Well, Gary's still working on his 80s playlist.
I have this other email from Nick in San Diego.
You know he's mad.
Nick in San Diego has a pretty long email, but one of the things he says in it, he calls Brian Lowe. I was watching PVN and Brian Milhouse Lowe.
Milhouse.
Now, Roosevelt Colvin used to call him Jared from Subway.
He does look
Rodney
a little
Harrison.
Bit
like
Oh, Rodney Harrison called him Jared from
wow,
Subway.
Wow, B-Lo taking an absolute pounding today yes. in the air. Wow.
That's funny.
Milhouse.
Where all this hatred?
Well, because I think people are realizing that he's not that talented. Something we've realized all along.
Well, I don't want to let the cat out of the bag.
He's a selfish
but
jerk.
Starting with this regular season, Patriots Video News, which is now again going to be called Patriots Today on the web, is going to be expanded to a half-hour show daily.
Wow.
With a host. Brian Lowe will still be involved. He'll be in there, but there's going to be a host that they've hired.
A real host.
And I've seen her. And I think people will be pleased.
I think so.
Gary, have you met her?
I have not, but much like the robotic cameras, B-Lo is being replaced.
Yes.
No, he's going to be on in the show, but, you know.
I'm sure we'll hear his voice somewhere.
But, no, Can't seriously, a half hour a day, every day, Monday through Friday, on Patriots.
Am I ever going to get to stand next to this new host?
Oh, I think Hopefully. You will. I think there's
She's tiny.
I love her.
Say that.
I've never even seen her. I can just tell I love her.
Okay.
Oh, why am I getting married? God help me.
Because when you stand next to her, she won't know you're there.
What an awful decision. But if I was cool like I used to be, I'd still be able to
not.
Get women. I could be cool. Give me a chance. Why am I doing this? Someone
Tom,
help
you
me.
You weren't cool. You were wanted back then. I mean, you were on the lam, weren't you? You know, running away from people.
Yeah,
and...
but women wanted me. Men wanted to be me.
Exactly.
Now
their husbands were after
you. You were a wrestler?
Oh, why am I getting married? God help me.
That might make it tough.
Yeah, that could make it.
No, so that's something to look forward to for Patriots fans starting with the first regular season week.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Now, what's this going to have?
It's going to be a daily show of just what happened today in Patriots.
On the internet.
On the internet and on-demand Comcast. But
so a half hour on the interesting.
It's very ambitious.
Is it podcastable?
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Yep. Very ambitious.
And you don't have to see B-Lo. You'll still have to hear him.
Well, he'll be on it.
Doing VOs and that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah. You can never get rid of B-Lo. Ever.
He'll be in the locker room doing interviews.
30 years from now, B-Lo will still be working here.
Let's see.
Mark, if I ever reach a position of power.
Mark with a C from New Hampshire. Do you think Belichick loaded up this season on Moss, Stallworth, and Welker because he thought maybe his defense last year couldn't stop the Colts and figured he could outscore them this year? Also, Tom, I didn't receive my invitation to the wedding.
Oh, sorry about that. We do have room. I have six cousins, and one of them is coming to the wedding. That'll show you how popular I am.
Is that right?
Those freaking douchebags.
So
wait till I get a hold of them, too. They're dead to me. My family is dead to me. I hate everybody in my family. You guys are more family to me than most of those
losers.
So
your side of the church is going to be like...
Yeah, we got to have like half of Allison's people go over there so it evens it out.
Is that right?
I hate my family. I can't stand them.
All right.
I ever see that fat guinea cousin of mine, I'm going to kill him.
Mark can go, but he just can't get the suite at the hotel. Yeah.
I've got it.
It was taken.
Fred got the suite. I'm sitting in some crappy little room, and Fred's got the suite.
You're not going to be doing much sitting.
I'm going to be passed out.
Patty from Ireland, what's up, A-Team and A-Hole?
Shut up.
Last week, you guys were talking about Andy fighting Chris Ferreira or Ali's daughter, so I'm writing this email to make a deal. If Tom or Paul can arrange this fight and put it on YouTube, I'll buy you food for a month. I'd love to see Andy get his ass kicked. Also, if
keep
I buy the food, could you tell me, is Andy allergic to anything? Because I would hate to order the wrong food and have Andy's head swell up to twice the size of a normal person's head, or am I too late? Screw you, Andy Glassjaw Hart.
Well, who's this again?
Patty from Ireland.
Patty the drunk.
Here's the problem, Patty. After giving it much thought, and nobody likes to see people in pain and misery more than I do, I cannot allow this fight to happen because Chris Ferreira will die in the ring. I mean, let's be honest, he'll die in the ring. I can't have that on my conscience. However, if anyone wants to give Leila Ali my phone number, I will promote that fight in a second, and I will be betting all my money against Andy Hart because he won't make it through two rounds.
I told my wife, they're thinking of doing it at our party, and she's like, what? They're not doing that here.
We'll let Connor be the referee.
Nobody was going to do it at your party. We were going to try to get a ring and everything, but I saw Chris at training camp, like standing around. I just thought to myself, he'll die in the ring. He'll die in the ring.
Fred, I found out why Patty is so has such a temper, so angry.
Inbred?
I did a little research online. No, not inbred. I looked up Irish stereotypes online to see just what are the generalities dealing with the Irish. Did you know they have exceptionally small penises?
That is a myth about, or
well,
that is
no, in Patty's case, it's true. It's dead on. Yeah. Why are you so angry?
Hey, it's a myth about Italians, too. Trust me.
He's got a small penis, and he's drunk a lot. That's why he's so angry.
Okay. Let's see. Kaysen writes in. He says, I think it's a good thing that
Gary,
the Patriots...
are you Irish?
I'm Polish.
There's
a
shock.
I think it's a good thing that the Patriots signed another quarterback to back up Tom, but I wasn't happy when it was announced that it would be Matt Gutierrez. I'm from Southern Idaho, and I watched him play at Idaho State and wasn't too impressed. I don't think he has the arm to be a pro. It may have been just a bad day, and I hope it was, but if he plays like that here, he's not going to make it out of rookie minicamp.
Let's be
honest.
He's
got a small penis, and he's drunk a lot. That's why he's so angry.
Let's be honest.
Is that Paul?
Matt Gutierrez's best chance is to make the practice squad. Right now, we have nothing to write about, so this is all a great story.
Right.
Oh, he went to Michigan. Oh, he's the next Tom Brady. You know what? He stunk at Idaho State, bottom line.
Well,
so
I just think it's great that that person actually saw him in person.
Yeah,
which is
and I talked to
most
him.
People can
he's
say.
A nice guy, and hopefully he'll make the team. But if we're being realistic, best chance would be the practice squad.
He's not making the team.
Phil in Nova Scotia, they got to have four quarterbacks for camps. That's why, you know, they got to sign somebody.
Someone's going to be here every year.
Well, they only have three right now, right?
Right, so they're probably
going to sign
another
one. Yeah, they'll sign one more.
I think there's minimal chance that anyone beyond Castle and Brady makes the roster. They'll have a veteran in the wing, speed dial guy.
Phil in Nova Scotia.
The punters and Junior Seau.
Right.
To begin with, I'd like to send best wishes and good luck to Tom and his future wife on their wedding day. Also,
you
I'd
should
like
send
to
your condolences to my future wife, let's be honest.
I would like to congratulate the too often ignored, needlessly ridiculed, and underappreciated Gary on his engagement to be married. Gary, is this enough to bump up my emails to the front of the pack? summer is approaching fast, so I'm looking for some good summer reading. I was wondering if you guys had any suggestions on books concerning football. I just subscribed to PFW last week, so that's already covered. Any advice would be appreciated.
Amazingly, I actually have an answer for this. It's called The Life and Crimes of Oklahoma Football. It's written by Charles Thompson, the quarterback who used to play there. it tells everything that was done when Barry Switzer was there. And if 40% of it's true, it's horrifying.
Wow.
It's the best book I ever read. I actually read it in 2 days, and it usually takes me 3 years to read a book. So that was a very good book.
Say the book again, the name.
There's a title. I can't remember the exact name of it because it's in my house in Johnstown. But it's The Life and Crimes of Oklahoma Football. It's written by Charles Thompson. He was the quarterback then. You could probably look it up on Amazon or something. Phenomenal book.
All right.
You wouldn't believe some of the stuff he says that went on there.
All right. Along those lines, Under the Golden Dome was kind of a same kind of vein about all the stuff that went on at Notre Dame. I forget. I don't know who wrote it. Of course, is The Education of a Coach by David Halberstam.
Which I have and have never opened.
Must read for Patriots fans.
You read that, Fred?
No. I'm waiting for someone to give me a free copy.
Okay, well, won't be the guy who wrote it.
Let's see. Arsene. I hope I'm saying his name right. A-R-S-I-N-E-H is writing in. He's from Bern, Switzerland. He says, "Hey, Andy, Paul, Tom, and Jake Steele, great show. I'm even big in Switzerland. As a foreign fan,
something like Jake Steele.
What?
Gary played the soundbite before you came down, and it was you going, I don't know, maybe something like Jake Steele. You had to have been thinking about that for 10 years.
You had something
just came
ready.
Out with it.
Have you discussed this with your wife that you don't like your name?
You
and
know,
you've thought of,
I think of these things off the top of my
Jake
head.
Jake Steele, so she'd be Mrs. Jake Steele.
There you go, Mrs. Steele.
Mrs. Steele. You want us to call you.
You let us know.
I don't know.
Like, by the way, I just
saw Robert. Maybe like Jake Steele or something like that.
I don't know. Maybe Jake Steele.
Paul's group is 2-1.
Okay.
No, they're not.
At the Husky tournament. Well, they're cheating.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah. Let's see. Great show. As a foreign fan, I try to keep up with various teams, and you guys are at the top as far as the websites and team media. PFW in Progress beats out any of the other webcast podcasts out there, even when Tom is running the show or Gary and his sound bites are replaced by an intern. I read a story last week about the NFL updating its media policy. The story was vague, but hinted that the league is getting more strict about injury reports, depth charts, and media across the coaching staff.
Yes.
Do you guys know any more about it, and do you see it having much of an impact? It seems like a policy clearly aimed at coaches like Bill Belichick.
Yes.
And it seems to me that the policing depth charts and injury reports is a nearly impossible task for the league. Are the little lies, half-truths, and other chafe thrown out by coaches like Belichick something important enough that a crackdown will have any effect other than helping out a fantasy football crazed girl like me set her lineup every week? Oh, and congrats to Gary on getting engaged. You guys need to keep Gary happy so we don't get that intern again.
I like the intern.
The intern wasn't bad. He did all right.
Just quick, Fred, it's Down and Dirty, The Life and Crimes of Oklahoma Football by Charles Thompson.
Down and Dirty.
And, yeah, he has a segment in there where he talks about having anal sex with a girl that is just downright.
The author did?
Yeah, he was the quarterback.
Oh.
And it was so god-awful disgusting that I almost threw up. So it's got that kind of stuff in there, what they did in the football dorm, things that Switzer did as the coach.
Wow.
It's just amazing.
Okay. All right.
Sorry, I wasn't listening to the email.
But back to the email, the policy. Do you think it's going to have much of an effect on the Patriots opening up the coaches?
If they follow it, yes. It's very dramatically different from what they do. It's coordinators have to be available once a week. Have to have reasonable access to all position coaches. I mean, those are the two major ones.
I think
open
it's stupid.
Well, I don't. You may think that, but the commissioner, your boy, likes it.
I know, but they're trying to make it more media friendly. So of course,
right? They're trying to keep it on the
front
page.
But I don't think fans
around.
Give a crap what the offensive line coach says.
You don't think they would like to talk to the offensive coordinator a certain week after a questionable game plan?
Who?
Fans. They don't want to hear from Josh McDaniels. They don't want to hear.
And
from
I'm Bill Belichick, and I'm telling my line coach, you know what? Just tell him you got to talk to Bill about that. And that's, they're going to get a lot of that, and that's all they're going to get.
They're talking about around the NFL, though, too. Because I'll tell you one thing. After that Minnesota game, I'd love to talk to the defensive coordinator and ask them what the heck he was doing against the Patriots.
He was getting a head coaching job.
But even if they say what you said, Fred, at least I feel like I've done my part. Like I've done my job.
Well, for the media. But I don't think fans care that much.
I really disagree.
Don't.
Depending
I think
who the coordinators
our fans
are.
Know that Josh McDaniels is in his first year calling plays and would like to know what the heck he's doing, what the heck he's thinking, what's going on.
And he's not going to tell you.
Exactly.
That may or may not happen, but they want the chance. And okay. Every once in a while, he might say something.
All right, I just think it's a big deal about nothing.
And the other issue is once a week, I believe, they have to open up OTAs, organized team activities,
right.
To the media,
right.
Supposedly.
So we'll send them to some charity events that the players are at. That's an off-season.
No. That's not what they're referencing.
I know.
If the Patriots do things like that, they'll be receiving fines from the commissioner because it says that these will be enforced strictly. Some of the other things, the injury report, it's just tweaking the same system. You only have to do the out probable whatever thing on Friday. The rest of the week, you just say who practiced, who didn't, how much the percentage was, and you have to put out a depth chart every week. Patriots already put one out. It's in the media release every week. I'm sure they'll put out the same depth chart moving forward.
Right.
It's to stop teams. Was it Mangini last year in the preseason just did alphabetical order? You're no longer allowed to do anything alphabetically. It's supposed to be a legitimate attempt at a depth chart. But I don't know how they're going to enforce it. Have you met Goodell? Do you know him?
Yes, I have. I met him. I mean, you know.
What will he do if Bill, sort of tweaks him? If he doesn't do exactly what the rules are saying, how will Goodell react? Will he levy a big fine against the Patriots?
I think definitely he'll take action. You know, the first call will be to the Crafts, and they'll he won't let it slide. Let's put it that way. He's, you know.
Because it's going to tweak coaches. Yeah. There are going to be coaches that are pissed off being told what to do.
I know. Shannon writes that he says, congrats, Gary. Remember, one in the stink and four wait. I agree. If Hannah is listening.
What? I got that one as I was about to walk out the door.
Okay. Anyway, thanks for having Big John on your show today, which was simply awesome. Will that be a new trend where a former or current player is sitting in on the show for 30 minutes or so every week? Corey Hilliard aside, how many other bums were there in the two-day mini camp? Did anyone look better in their draft position? Also, what's with all the Pats fans in Ireland and Scotland? Did the Crafts drop a huge Pats care package via parachute over that region? Or do the Patriots have their own brand of potatoes, lager, and kilts that I don't
That's
know
where
about?
I was going to go with that.
Mike Elgin.
Why are we so mean on this show to people?
I don't know.
Mike Elgin looked pretty good as far as practicing.
As far as 270-pound offensive lineman.
He said... Who looked good at practice? Mike Elgin did every drill perfect. And,
he had shorts on, and Vince Wilfork wasn't lined up in front of him.
I didn't say he was going to make the team either. He asked me who looked good in practice, and I said Mike Elgin. That was it.
That was
Mike Elgin. that was about it.
Great draft class and free agent.
Meriwether didn't do anything.
Right, he'll be fine.
Kareem Brown didn't do anything.
Right.
Justice Harrison looked terrible. Slow feet. I mean, couldn't catch the ball out of the backfield. Dropped four straight passes right in his hands. So
that ticks the coaches off.
Yep, Ivan Fears tore into him something fierce.
Get it?
Chris says, just curious, what happened to the player in the draft that had all the New England ties? I don't remember his name. I just remember you guys talking about him a few times. I think maybe his dad or some other relative was a Patriot
for the Giants.
Plays for the Giants now. He's a fourth-round pick.
Okay. Let's see. Eric from Manchester. Over or under regular season. Ready?
Okay, go.
Maroney misses 2.5 games.
Over.
Whoa.
Tom can't talk about his boy in the negative light.
Come here.
I'm sorry. I have a doctor's appointment. I thought you
meant you could leave in 5 minutes early from work. So you're leaving 3 hours early, 4 hours early from work.
Oh, sorry. I have to go to...
hours early.
Well, do you have a cure for diabetes, Fred? Because if you have one, I'd love to stay here that extra 3 hours and work for you.
No, but so you said you were leaving 5 minutes early.
Sometimes I have sweets.
I'm not from the show. Oh, okay. I leave 5 minutes early from work every day.
I know that. Okay.
Paul doesn't come at all.
Well, Christ, now I might as well just stay. You only got
three minutes left.
No, you can go.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Under or over. Go.
Ross catches 66 balls.
What was the first one?
First one.
Maroney misses 2.5 games. That's just so there's no push.
Under. I'll say two.
Okay.
Over.
Moss catches 66 balls.
Under. Over.
Would you say under, mm-hmm. Andy? And Tom says over. Moss catches 8.5 TD passes.
Over.
Over. Over both. Samuel, if he doesn't sit out, 6.5 interceptions.
Under.
Under. Okay.
Interceptions are circumstantial.
Patriots wins 12.5.
Under.
Over.
Under, I'll say 12.
Yeah, me too.
Maroney yards, 1,200.
Over.
Under.
Oh, okay. Brady babies, 1.5.
Two.
Over.
Okay. Well, we know it's at least one, right? Okay.
Be twins.
I say he's got 6 or 7 floating around out there.
His boys can swim.
Let's see. Zeus writes in from Rancho Mirage. He says, it seems to me that the whole concept of a franchise tag isn't working anymore. Players don't seem to respect it and hence don't adhere to it. What's the chance the NFL revokes it?
Zero.
None.
Well, it would have to be the next time they do the contract.
Right. And they'll tweak it. They tweaked it this time where they did the thing where in the third year it's the average of all the highest paid players. So essentially every player will be paid like a quarterback. I think they'll continue to do things to try to tweak it, but I think you'll always see some form of it.
All right, we'll close the show out with an email from Brighty in Cambridge, England, following the whole England, Ireland, Scotland theme. Can you guys send me the look? Can you send me the look at that douchebag soundbite? Also, get someone else on Patriots Today
because
B-Lo really annoys the hell out of me.
Join the club.
Also, what's the news on Chris Brown? I don't think I've missed anything, but if I have, can you just recap for me? Casale for president. Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work, and congrats to Gary. I feel for the chick.
Great email.
Nothing new on the Chris Brown front.
No.
Supposedly still mulling an offer from the Patriots. That was it.
That's it. All right.
Wait, let's just say one more time, Josh. Thanks for lunch.
Thanks, Josh.
He said it was his pleasure. Excellent show. Interview with Hannah was great. Hopefully he was able to enjoy a slice as well. No, he actually didn't. Fred ran him out of here. he wants to make it up for the season opener against the Chargers and meet the world-famous Patriots Football Weekly journalist crew.
No problem.
We'll figure something out.
I'd like to thank John Hanna for being here, being greatness myself. It was
nice
to be sitting next to greatness.
Boo.
Two great people together, Tom Casale and John Hanna. Thank you very much.
All right, that's going to do it. We'll see you next Wednesday.